about. You gotta put it in perspective.
The word linkage reminds me of sausage. Never cared much for the links, preferred the patties. But breakfast is a real good idea.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
B.I.G.
I am nothing without my following. I want to say to everybody that's been reporting me, think twice because you're ruining my life. Because I make all of my money online. All of it. And I don't want to lose that. And I know people like to see me be down and be like them and be like the 90%ers, the people that work 9 to 5. That is not me. I have no job qualifications. I could never work a normal job. I am worthless. I bring nothing to the table. Zero.
And now.
Yeah, well, that's your problem.
You.
Our feature presentation.
Morning, everybody. Brand new Kevin and Bean Show. It is Monday morning, the 15th of April.
Kids?
Bean.
Mm-hmm.
When is it appropriate to wear a tank top in general? Like, what are the... Let's name all of the places where it's appropriate to show up in a tank top.
I'll allow the beach.
I will allow beach. Okay. I will allow pool.
All right.
And that's it. Coachella.
It's very specific, but sure, I'll give it to you.
Sure, tank top at Coachella. Music festival, I think it's okay. Weenie roast, right?
Outdoor concert I'll even give you.
Okay.
Barbecue at Griffith Park?
Again, very specific.
I'm just thinking
of the
kinds of places.
Are we just listing every event that exists?
I'm just trying to think of places where it would be okay to wear a tank top.
I think outdoors, anything we're talking about, like a barbecue, a concert, that type of
thing. I'll throw water park into the mix.
Oh, sure.
All right. Nice.
Sure.
How about on an airplane?
No.
Don't do that.
Uh-uh. Never, ever, ever, right?
No.
How about on the Kevin and Bean Show at K-Rock?
I mean, no. It's not. I'm too close to your underarm pity hair.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's
yeah.
pity hair now?
Yeah, pity hair.
Feel bad
that
for
almost,
it?
Yeah, that almost makes it sound cute, though, because I think of the pit bull and like, oh, look at that pity pit.
Or I thought you meant like Mr. 305.
Now, Ruben, who is, there's a senior assistance program that K-Rock is involved with, where we give really, really old people who don't have any family left, we give them something to do a few hours a week, just so they're not just sitting around the old folks.
He's 79, right. But he does a pretty good job.
He's in his 30s. You guys,
well, I mean,
agree
now, that
to disagree.
Now that he's wearing a tank top, I feel like you could actually literally count the rings on him and see that he's over 100. But what's, I mean, is it, forgive me for not checking the weather, but is it 115 out there this morning? Is that why?
It's not.
No, it's kind of cold, actually.
It's chilly, like upper 60s.
That's a strange choice, I got to say.
Yeah, what's he doing?
I don't know.
Now, Kevin, you were big into tank tops in the early days.
Wouldn't say big. I just didn't care. But then once I started seeing pictures of myself, I was like, okay, when is it right for me to wear a tank top?
Right.
Never.
Okay.
None of the above mentioned, nothing.
So we're talking like 80s, 90s.
Yeah.
It was a different time.
Yeah. Late 80s, early 90s, right.
Yeah. So I made a lot of bad decisions.
Yeah. You don't wear it in this culture.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. They had a whole episode of I'm Sorry where Andrea Savage's husband had a tank top.
I love that one.
And then I'm not going to give any spoilers, but let's just say it was a long con. Just watch season 2. It is a delight.
Well,
I'm sorry you had to see it, Bean. I can tell it's
I feel terrible for you guys.
I haven't
of the
seen
pity
it yet.
Hair,
so. Yeah,
Ruben's in a tank top, Kevin.
Should we have him come in?
Yep.
Is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Ruben,
please come in.
He probably can't hear me. Can you invite him in?
Yeah, Ruben. Oh, wait. Hey, Ruben, are you there? Come in and bring your tank top.
Oh, he's wrapped up in a blanket. Okay.
It's not. Yeah, it's cold.
Oh, it's cold.
Because you're wearing
really?
Half a shirt.
Winter is here.
It's always cold. Nice Game of Thrones reference.
Unbelievable.
What is happening?
You normally wear a normal shirt. What are you doing today?
What are you doing?
It was a long weekend.
Uh-huh.
Are you a lifeguard?
I think that's one of Muggo's side hustles.
You're also wearing shorts.
Ah, man.
Can I take a stab at what happened?
Yes, please do.
I feel like you maybe were driving in late from Coachella and thought, okay, I can either go to K-Rock like this or head home. You decided to come here, right?
We came straight here. Me and Muggs, we enjoyed on Sunday night, and straight from the festival grounds, we went back to the Coachella house, gathered our belongings, and then drove straight here.
I got to tell you, Ruben was on fire this weekend.
Yeah,
like I went to the K-Rock house, and he's wandering around like giving people shots. And
Ruben, all right,
he was losing it.
You mentioned Muggs. Is he also in a tank top?
Muggs has a full-on T-shirt, I think, today.
Okay.
A normal T-shirt.
Wow. That's not right.
Sorry, it was a late night. Very...
Okay. Huh. How drunk are you right now?
No, I'm not drunk. I was actually completely sober Sunday.
Okay.
Sunday. Yeah.
So you literally drove from the Coachella Festival to work this morning.
That's right.
And you've been up all night.
And I have another question. So you're wearing that tank top without being drunk? You can't even blame it on that? Sober? You picked that.
So you guys know that I normally wear like a hoodie. Every morning,
and
right?
And a hat. There's a lot of differences.
Yeah. The hat got ruined this weekend. There's dirt everywhere.
This is a different side of Ruben that I've ever seen.
It's pretty wild.
He's so quiet and reserved and helpful, and now he gets out there, he went crazy.
Party Ruben.
Now, was Coachella on your bucket list, Ruben? Is that why? You're going to be skydiving next?
No, it's because he was also at Woodstock. So now he's been at all of them. Unbelievable.
I think Muggs is rubbing off on me.
Whatever you two do in your own time is up to you.
Everything's going to be before and after Coachella for Ruben.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Well, you know, I actually feel a little bit better because Ruben didn't wake up in his own bed this morning and then go, I'm going to freak the world out by wearing a tank top to work. At least there's a reasonable explanation that this is what he wore all weekend long and he just came directly from the festival.
Mm-hmm. My sweatshirt got stolen too. So.
Wow!
I told you guys, man, this guy, he was crazy this weekend.
And then I woke up in a porta potty. Hey, Muggs, you want to do a shot?
Muggs is like, oh no, I think I've had it. Come on, Muggs! Hands in the shot.
Wow.
Ruben.
We've seen a whole different side of the old man.
It was a good weekend. What can I say?
The old man was partying.
Sounds like it. All right, Ruben, you are forgiven and you are excused, my friend. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Someone please take a picture in the back of this sad shawl he's wearing.
Yeah, is that a blanket?
Yeah.
It's an actual blanket.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Let's talk about today's Kevin Abiso show.
You can get the headphones. Because I guarantee you, none of you would blast in my shoes.
She's right, by the way. We wouldn't.
Yeah.
Danny Goldberg will join us in the studio.
Mm.
Manager of Nirvana has written a book called Serving the Servant.
Boy, that Kurt Cobain was a complicated dude.
He has a duality of all artists.
Yep.
Very, very much what you think he is, but then also very media savvy. Very odd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some highlights from Coachella.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to fill Ruben in on what he missed or doesn't remember.
I just can't believe that was the same guy that we've been working with all this time.
I'm telling you, he's so low-key here.
Yeah.
But there, man, he was just a party animal.
Desert Ruben is something else.
Yep. The woman who wants to be the fattest woman in the world.
Oh. That's usually something you try to stay away from.
That's her goal.
Huh.
Your dog is racist.
Yes.
We're talking about that today.
We heard from a bunch of people over the weekend. same deal as me. Their dog is racist.
It just makes no sense.
There he is now.
It's Monday, so it's great news on the program today. And we've got tickets for April Foolishness as well. We're going to be looking for a guy walks into a bar jokes a little bit later on this morning. We'll take a break. That's the way to wake up right there. It's AFI.
Mm-hmm.
The world famous K-Rock, 106.7 KROQ. It's the Kevin and Bean Show. It's 5:52.
A very quick reminder, by the way, this is your final 5 days to get in your entry if you'd like to be the opening act for Kevin and Bean's 11th annual April Foolishness. Close of our show on Friday is when you have to have your materials to us, and it's as simple as going to krock.com, be 18 or older. Fill out a form, send us a YouTube link of your comedy act, and you could be on the bill with us on the 26th at Kevin and Bean's April Foolishness. By the way, some seats still available for that if you want to join us, AXS.com. It's going to be a great night of comedy. Miss Allie McKay.
Bean Baxter.
How was your weekend?
It was really good. Thank you for asking.
Do anything fun?
I watched the new Star Wars trailer 846 times. Other than that, no time.
I knew that made you so happy.
Oh,
it
man.
Made us all so happy.
Oh, man.
Seeing General Organa hugging.
I watched it. The first time I watched it was with Dave and Christine in the office because we were in our meeting when it came out. I'm not on my phone during the meeting all that much, so I didn't know it had just come out.
Text me every single day during the meeting.
So the meeting ends, everybody's gone, and Dave goes, "You want to watch it?" I'm like, "Yeah, I do." So we're watching it, and as soon as I hear the first notes of what is the song that wakes me up every single morning,
Love Shack, Leia's theme. 52s?
No. It's Princess Leia's theme. I just started welling up. Yeah, I did. I welled up a little bit like a baby.
I was like, we can't hear the trailer. What are you doing?
Yeah. I'm just saying.
It's a good trailer.
Yeah, The Rise of Skywalker, by the way, everybody. Which then everybody launched into, well, who's a Skywalker? It's got to be Rey, right? Well, wait a minute, Kylo Ren, his mom's a Skywalker, too. What if it's neither of them? Oh, I mean, we're going to be doing this until December 20th, right? Yeah.
And how come, and I know, you know, the expression, but how come Billy Dee Williams has not aged 1 minute since the last time he was in a Star Wars movie?
He looks amazing.
He looks cool, I'll say
exactly
that.
Exactly the same.
He's amazing.
It's Colt 45.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, malt liquor.
Yeah, he drinks it and rubs it on his face, maybe?
Yeah, he told us a long time ago.
Yeah. I'm just saying, it looks fantastic. And if you haven't watched it, there are, of course, scenes with Princess Leia, General Organa. And it's her because they're using footage that they didn't use from 2015's The Force Awakens, which thank you, J.J. Abrams, for doing that and not going the CGI route, which I didn't think he would, but it was just nice to hear that, which is fantastic. Yeah. Which brings me to more Star Wars news, you guys. Of course, they announced that at Star Wars Celebration in Chicago on Friday. But the head of Lucasfilm, President Kathleen Kennedy, said it's a nice time to take a pause. It's not only the perfect time, it's exactly what we had in mind. So after Rise of Skywalker, which will be on December 20th, that's going to conclude the 42-year-old Skywalker saga that George Lucas started with the original 1977 Star Wars. They're taking a pause on the Star Wars movies for quite some time.
Wait, how much is... quite some time.
It's for years, I think.
Really?
Yeah, and I think that's a great, great thing. Kennedy confirmed that Game of Thrones creator David Benioff and D.B. Weiss are meeting with her to start talking about where they're going to go for the next decade. And The Last Jedi director Rian Johnson has been hired to helm a new original trilogy, but neither is expected anytime soon.
All right.
But of course, we have The Mandalorian, which will be premiering on Disney Plus streaming
service. People
are
very excited about that trailer.
Yeah, I think we're going to be good for a little bit. Take a break. Take a breather, right? Who's with me?
I'm okay with it.
Okay, good.
Speaking of DB and David from Game of Thrones, they're the showrunners for that show. Mm-hmm. Did you guys happen to see the Game of Thrones piece on 60 Minutes last night?
Am I 90? No.
I'll go ask Ruben.
Ruben, give me a full recap.
First of all, it was a great episode because it included the Warriors. It had a phenomenal Warriors piece.
Come out and play?
Nope. The Golden State Warriors.
Oh.
Which, Kevin, you'll love that. But second of all, the Game of Thrones thing, because I don't know anything about Game of Thrones, as you know. Everybody was trying to make a movie out of Game of Thrones. They kept going to George R.R. Martin when the books were out and they were so popular. And they said, let us make a movie. But he didn't want them to do it because he knew they were going to cut out a bunch of stuff, right? All the TV networks wanted to do Game of Thrones, and he didn't want them to do it because he knew that they were going to cut out all the sex and most of the violence. So these two guys that you mentioned, Dave and DB, they go to him and go, we have zero experience doing anything. We have never worked on a television show before, but we have a vision to bring this to television, and we're going to pitch it to HBO with your blessing.
No way.
That's crazy.
Yes.
The balls.
And he said yes?
And he said yes.
That's crazy.
Wow.
And they had never done it before. And they're the guys who've shepherded it through all the seasons up to the final season.
I mean, that's really impressive.
That is, it's a crazy, crazy showbiz story, but it worked out for everybody. So anyway, just sorry to bite your time there, but I just thought that was so interesting when I learned that about them.
Absolutely. I'm sure Kevin didn't see any movies this weekend. He was very busy out at Coachella, but Shazam tops the box office again with another $25 million in its second weekend, bringing the domestic haul up to $95 million. Worldwide, $259 million.
All right.
Not bad for a little movie called Shazam. Right?
Yep.
It's a good
time. Nice to see great things happen to Shaquille O'Neal. You know, he's retired a long time now.
Well, no, that's it's
back in show business. It's great. It's
Zachary Levi.
Very different.
We just talked to him last week about it. Remember?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, no big deal. Coming in number two, Little, which is the comedy starring Regina Hall, where she becomes Little. I'm sorry. I'm going to say it. Those previews, the trailer, hysterical. I can't wait to see this movie. They shrink her down.
I've not even heard of it.
It's like Freaky Friday. But it's big. Yeah, it's big in reverse. Except she's this awful boss. And then this little girl that's like on a tour of the company says, I wish you were little. And then all of a sudden she wakes up the next day and she's a little girl. So it looks really good. Issa Rae's in it, who I love from Insecure. Anywho, that came in at number two. Coming in at number three, Woof. Hellboy. 12 million.
Ooh.
Yeesh.
Yeah, those reviews, not good.
Yeesh. That's not a great opening for Hellboy.
And apparently not a great movie.
Yeesh. Yeah. Coming in number four, Pet Sematary with 10 million. And Dumbo rounding out the top five. Bean, what does it all mean? Taylor Swift.
Oh.
That countdown clock, right?
Yeah, for real.
Yeah, she started teasing something big by posting vague hints, having fans believe their seventh studio album is on the way. And we now know, or do we, that it will arrive on April 26th at midnight on Saturday. She posted an Instagram story of a stylized countdown clock, which she's also put on her website. The clock ends, you guessed it, April 26th. Or maybe she knows something we don't.
She's looking forward to Foolishness. That's what tells me.
Oh, that is right.
Yeah. Thank you, Taylor.
You guys weren't going to tell me she's a special guest and she's going to come out on April Foolishness?
Right. It was a surprise.
Oh,
I figured now is as good a time as any.
She's been working on a tight 20.
She's big into countdown clocks. She does that in her personal life, too. She puts things she's looking forward to on her phone.
Did you sync up your watch with it?
What do you mean? Hold on. What if she puts things she's looking forward to in a countdown clock?
On her phone, yes. So this
is a nerd. Like maybe you put something that's happening in October, like countdown to Christmas.
Yeah, she does it for like brunch, you know. But anyway, my point is that we don't know whether it's an album. We don't know whether it's a single. We don't know what it is. But
you didn't catch that I put that on my countdown clock. The countdown to Christmas for Hallmark movies.
You actually did, didn't you? Anyway, I'm excited. Whatever it is.
I'm excited for you because you love her. And I think only good things happen when you love people.
Huh?
You sure I wasn't a Coachella?
Not sure.
Agree.
You expose a tank top.
Yes, that'd be amazing. Some birthdays for you guys. Emma Thompson, Emma Watson, Linda Perry, Maisie Williams, and Seth Rogen.
Now.
6.7 K-Rock is KROQ. This is the Kevin and Bean Show at 6:06.
Any day that involves Jack White being played on the radio is a good day for me, as far as I'm concerned.
Agreed.
I know you were out of Coachella, Kevin. You were not transfixed to CBS as the rest of the nation was yesterday.
I did see a few Instagrams and stuff and just flew past them.
Look.
It's golf.
I know. And I feel the same way you do.
But it's golf.
Remember President Bartlett when he said,
okay, well, golf's not a sport. It's fine, don't get me wrong, but let's not you and I confuse it with things that men do.
I mean, he's not wrong. If Ruben can do it, it's not a sport, right? But people are calling it the greatest comeback in sports history. Tiger Woods, kids, has not won a major tournament since 2008. He won the U.S. Open in 2008. Has
loser,
not won the
Masters. Right?
What?
Loser.
Right. Has not won the Masters in 14 years. So since 2005, he has not won the Masters. This dude, and forgive me if this is going to be in the piece you're going to play, Kevin. This dude has been through so much physically. He has had knee surgery and four back surgeries. There have been times where he could barely walk. And the fact that he came back and played golf at this level is pretty astonishing. Even if you're not that impressed by golf, it's a crazy, crazy comeback.
Yeah, you need your back. You got to put your back into it.
I would think so. Back into it, right? And that's not even getting into the mental comeback that he had as a result of all those self-inflicted wounds with everything that he went through.
I know we're going to listen to some newscasts on it, but I think I got some hot take Jones on this.
All right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to hear it now?
Yeah.
What was the dramatic pause?
No, because I got to warm up.
Oh, okay.
All right, well, let's hear a little news, and then we'll hear your hot take. Because this is a little bit of how the coverage has been.
Father, son, and an unforgettable embrace. Almost the same spot as his hug with Dad Earl 22 years ago.
To have my kids there, it's come full circle. You know, my dad was here in 97, and now I'm the dad with two kids there.
And this was the perfect spot to chase redemption. Tiger knew it wouldn't come easily, but patiently and almost inevitably, he crafted his attack. By the 18th, he knew, as did the huge galleries, that the green jacket was his.
The return to glory.
When I tapped the putt in, I don't know what I did, but I know I screamed.
There was presidential approval too. Love people who are great under pressure. What a fantastic life comeback for a really great guy, said Donald Trump. And this from Barack Obama. Congratulations, Tiger, to come back and win the Masters after all the highs and lows is a testament to excellence, grit and determination.
First of all, I hate the Brits and their accent.
Bad news for you.
Second of all, who wins a golf tournament and hears from two presidents?
That is odd.
That's kind of crazy, yeah. Right?
And what a lousy prize it is. You just get a jacket.
Well, no, you also get like a couple million
green.
Dollars. No, there's a lot of cash involved in it as well.
Oh, I didn't know. Okay.
We never thought we'd see this again.
Right.
He's 43 years old. And he won the Masters yesterday. My question is he, now that he has the monkey off of his back, is he now in a place physically and mentally where now he's going to go on another tear and win a bunch more tournaments? Or is this a fluke? Do you think he's back? I mean, if you play well enough to win the Masters, I feel like you can win anything, right?
He did say, I mean, I did hear an interview where they asked him if he expected to win it again. Mm-hmm. And his answer was yeah, which was kind of a cool answer because he was like, I just didn't think it was going to be this one. But he said that his skills have shown a lot of progress over the last few months, mm-hmm. and he thought he was on track. So, yes, I don't think he thought he was good for just this weekend. I think he thinks he's back in the game.
Yeah. Well, it was pretty remarkable. I talked to one of my neighbors yesterday who cried when he saw, and I saw a lot of that on social media.
I'm warming up.
He said it made him feel like he was back in high school the last time he saw Tiger win, you know, win the Masters.
I'm back. Here's the thing.
Hot take. What do you got?
Here's the thing. We could have helped him much earlier. I feel like everyone likes a comeback, so I understand that. But are we all pretending that, like, the entire pop culture universe did an S on him for years and years and years because he had obvious mental issues and one of the biggest falls in sports history?
Right.
I mean, I get the surgeries are awesome, but, like, this was a talk show joke for a very long time that we all could have maybe lessened up on. He recently had that DUI not that long ago, and I know that people sort of at that time, like, backed off him, like, oh, Tiger Woods is in some trouble. But I don't know. I mean, could we have maybe celebrated him earlier?
Over
the last few years, I just feel like he was a punchline for a really long time.
He was.
And I'm just surprised by...
I just think that's true of anyone famous for anything.
I don't know.
Everyone
don't
has
people,
to deal with it.
I don't think... I don't want to make these comparisons, but like I don't think people are excited for, say, like Charlie Sheen's comeback or any of the Me Too people's comebacks. Like, I don't mean like rapists, don't get me wrong. I'm just saying like people who've had weird experiences with women. Like, I'm just surprised.
And he did cheat on his wife with multiple porn stars.
And it was just a very... I'm a big Tiger Woods fan. I think everyone also goes through highs and lows of their life and who's to judge and et cetera.
Right.
But I just don't... I think it's weird that we push people down so low. And then when they come up, we all pretend like no one was involved in the part that made him... Like kind
it
of
made his life so much worse
full
for so many years.
Mental breakdown. Yeah,
I think it has a lot to do with the nostalgia factor that people saw Tiger winning, and it took them back to where they were in '97, where they were a frame of mind. It was this great time, and
that was totally the deal with my neighbor.
That's
Absolutely.
What it was. It was nostalgia, and you it becomes a selfish thing as you're watching it because you're thinking about yourself.
Yeah.
While you're watching.
Well, if I was Tiger Woods, I'd be like, I've been here the whole time. Like I've been hoping.
Yeah, but he wasn't really on a path of redemption at any point. He kept screwing up and kept screwing up and kept screwing up. And people got sick of watching their star fall lower and lower.
I just think that might be a little chicken and egg. Because if we celebrated him earlier, could he have made the change? Because I do think after the DUI, people
celebrated?
Well, I think if you...
That he was trying, you mean?
What is it? Sorry?
You celebrate that he was trying,
yes,
you mean?
Yes, yes. I think that it's chicken. Like, I'm saying, like, if we had celebrated his trying before, would he have had a quicker time getting to that
point?
I'm
not sure that's our job.
But I don't know if
help him get to that
point. I guess, but our point, job, you know, is to push him down so far with the punchline.
I'm not pushing him anywhere because it's golf and I don't care.
So you think, Jensen, you think there were probably plenty of people who were heaping praise on him and being excited for him and happy for him that if we looked in their timeline a year ago, would still have been S-ing on him.
Possibly. And also, like, if it made you cry, which I'm, that's great for you and your emotions, but, like, that's
high praise.
And I guess if you feel that way, I'm surprised to hear so much goodwill to Tiger Woods because I feel like we never gave it to him over the past 10 years.
Well, America loves winners. We love winners.
Right. That's the odd feeling.
He hasn't really deserved it for the last 10 years.
He's trying.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, of course. Yeah. Everyone tries.
What do you mean by trying? Because he was in some tournaments?
A lot of tournaments, yeah. I mean, he's been playing for a few years now. I mean, I guess I'm just surprised to see that everyone was rooting for him. Does that make
sense? Because you don't think
everyone was.
You thought people had written him off.
Yeah.
Or just sort of been like, oh, that dude's a scumbag. Or something along those lines.
I still say it's nostalgia. I still say maybe. It's a selfish thing that we're rooting for ourselves and the old us that has become so off.
I mean, listen, if you this is really quite a metaphor for Allie. But yeah, I mean, I guess that means it's a hot take. I get it.
Well, it did remind me. I know we got to take a quick break here. But I mean, the first thing that I thought of was, you may be too young for this, Jensen, but when George Foreman came back and won the heavyweight crown and he was like 80. I don't know what he was, but he was really
yeah,
old.
The guy with the grill.
What
yeah.
did he do?
He boxed.
Shut up.
Did you know that? Yeah.
No way.
He was years removed from his last heavyweight title, and he came back as a very old boxer and won the crown again. That's kind of what this reminded me. Like, you thought you'd never see him at the top again.
Yeah.
And he did it.
Bean, I don't mean to crush your soul, but a lot of people think that fight was fixed.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So, Kevin, mm-hmm. I see the kind of shape that Ruben and Beer Mug are in.
Right.
But you seem fresh as a daisy after a weekend at Coachella.
I didn't stay last night and drive in this morning.
Mm. Okay.
And I've always thought that if I'm doing something fun on the weekend, I can't come in and complain for being tired.
Mm-hmm.
Because I did it. Because I wanted to do it.
It was
a good time.
You do not sound like a guy who spent the weekend at Coachella, but
tell us
how it was.
I loved it. I loved it. I really loved it.
What's your favorite weekend of the year? I know that. It did not disappoint?
Correct. And I was talking to somebody backstage, and he was like, I don't understand why everybody complains about the lineup. And I said, me either. I literally used to put together all of these acts, and you get the Coachella app, and they give you a 15-minute warning, hey, so-and-so, and you can pick which ones you want to get, an alert for. Mm-hmm. And so you can tell exactly where everybody is and when they're going on, and you just completely lose track, and you're seeing something else, and you see that, you don't look at it. So it does... I think it's so much fun because it's live music everywhere, and just because I don't know them doesn't mean it's not going to be a blast.
So you just wander.
Yes.
Did you take my advice and at least dip into Casey Musgraves?
I mean, technically, I wasn't on the grounds at that second.
Damn you to hell.
But I did see a video of her that I tweeted to you where she said, Callie, can I get a yeehaw? And I was like, nope, not for me.
I think
happy not to be there at that moment because I would have gone, boo!
He hates yeehaws.
Yeehaw. Come on now. Are you still there?
He's
gone.
You made him leave.
You made him leave. What a bummer.
Although if you watch the video, she says, when I say ye, you say ha. Ye,
that's
ha.
Worse.
But at one point...
It's her flub.
Because as a
former rapper, I will tell you.
She puts the mic out and they all yell ha. And she goes, I didn't say F and ye. Well, no, you put the mic out to do a call.
Yeah, she did it wrong.
What are you doing?
By the way, a common mistake amongst hip-hop MCs.
Yeah.
This is to give the mic out at the top,
right,
instead of the back, and then it makes for a very weird thing where you go yay away,
right,
yay away from the mic, and then everyone's like, wait, am I supposed to say hi?
And I saw Billie Eilish, and she was awesome, and there was some type of, like, you know, the festival hipsters that don't really care about the music at all. And it was pretty crowded for Billie Eilish.
They're there for the clothing and the,
and the Instagram pictures and whatever.
People were there for Billie, though.
Yeah, a lot were. But like some of them, I heard some of them talking. We're like, I don't even know who this is. I don't know why it's so crowded. And that sucked. But and then she was late 25 minutes or a half hour because of the staging. They couldn't figure out how to get the staging set. It wasn't her fault. But when she came out, I thought she was great.
I saw a bunch of it, too, on the stream, and she was great, first of all. And it's you do have to remind yourself she's only 17, and she has not been performing live for very long. She's going to be a headliner. There's no question about that. She's only going to get bigger. And the thing that happened on Sunday with Billie Eilish is the thing that everybody is talking about. Allie, I know it made your heart swell three sizes.
It made me so happy because we've talked about this. You guys talked about it with Billie Eilish, right?
We have a clip of us talking to her about her first love, Justin Bieber.
Justin Bieber, right? Obviously. But anybody could say that, right? Because I feel like everybody had a Justin Bieber phase when they were like 12 or something.
Sure.
And so when I say that, it doesn't sound as serious as it really was. And my mom is in the room and she can literally vouch for it, which is that when I was like 12, I was not a fan of him. That was like my first love. Like that was the person I was in love with. In my head, he was in love with me. It was like a relationship with a person. You know when you like, you date somebody for a while, and that's your partner, and then you break up with them, and if you see a picture of them, without really thinking, you automatically are like, oh, that's that person I was in a relationship with.
That's how you feel about Justin Bieber?
That's how I feel about Justin
Bieber. Billie Eilish might be psychotic, which is totally fine. I'm just like,
no, but
feel or felt?
This is...
Still feel or felt?
I'm not in a relationship with him.
No, I know.
But it's
you're the one that thought you were, by the way.
No, but...
in the duh relationship, but we might be able to say it to you.
I'm saying that it wasn't like a weird... thing.
No, totally not. Definitely
like,
not.
So there was video that I woke up to this morning that made me so happy. You see Justin Bieber and he's got a little like a breathing mask type thing on.
This is during Ariana Grande?
Yes. Ariana Grande is performing. Mm-hmm. You see Justin Bieber looking over at this young lady. That young lady is Billie Eilish. You see her eyes nearly pop out of her head and then she doubles over like, get it together, Billy. Get it together. This is him. You're finally going to meet him. And then she pops back up and then she hugs him. And you would think they hadn't seen each other in decades.
Yeah.
And just this beautiful hug. Well, he's never seen her, but it was lovely to see. She met her idol.
Yeah.
Somebody she's loved forever.
Now, somebody must have clued him into, hey, Billie Eilish is in love with you. Will you go say hi to her?
I assume that happened a while back,
right? Well,
he knew of...
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. She's been on Ellen talking about it. He's well aware. Yeah.
That was a sweet moment. And by the way, I mean, I think we would all feel that way if we met somebody that we felt that way that she feels about Justin.
Yeah, sure.
But plus being a 17-year-old girl, can you imagine what that meant to her? Can you imagine?
Amazing.
All started here, guys, the Kevin and Bean Show.
I'm not sure that's true.
Well, it is.
I think it all started when she was 12 and had a crush on
us. Okay, well, we were there too.
Kevin, we lost my signal, I'm sure on purpose, a couple minutes ago. Did you talk about Weezer?
I did not, no.
Just real quick, let's hit Weezer because, and you tweeted this out, that you've seen them a bunch of times and they never disappoint.
Every single time, love it.
They're always great.
Yep.
And they could not have been more fun. That was such an unbelievable set. And to have actual Chili from TLC come out and sing No Scrubs with them was a stroke of genius, right?
Yep.
And then to have the Tears for Fears guys.
Kurt Smith. Well, just Kurt. Kurt
just
Smith.
Just Kurt. Yeah.
But the mic didn't work. So that made it less good. When they were doing Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
Yeah.
You couldn't hear them.
Still great effort, though.
I agree. It was a great show, but I'm just saying, whoever was in charge of the guest mics for the entire festival for all weekend, having a hard time.
Really?
Yeah.
They probably don't rehearse the guests, maybe, and then when they come
out... But a lot of them, their mics weren't on.
Yeah, that's a problem.
So, it happened to Billie Eilish?
That is a good cameo. I feel like the Ariana Grande one that everyone's talking about today is not a good cameo, because everyone's like, NSYNC and Ariana Grande!
Justin Timberlake.
And I was like, oh, so she got Chris Kirkpatrick, Joey Fatone, Lance Bass, and J.C. Jazze. Wow, how'd she do that? Did she ask them?
But she also had Nicki Minaj, she had P. Diddy, she had Mace.
Good ones. Mm-hmm. Those are good ones.
I think they had mic issues as well.
I'm telling you, whoever was in charge of it,
it was a real S show for the guest mic.
Everybody sounded great, I thought, except for the guests. who you couldn't hear.
Well, you're going back next year.
It was a great, of course. It's my
you're
favorite
going back
weekend.
Next weekend. Are you kidding me? Last week was the 25th anniversary of the death of Kurt Cobain, and Danny Goldberg was his very close friend and advisor at that time, had managed Nirvana, and he has written a book called Serving the Servant. Danny's going to be in studio with us here on the Kevin and Bean Show at 8 a.m. A lot to talk about. We all remember lots of different facets of Kurt Cobain's life, but Danny was there for all of them, so that'll be a lot of fun. Coming up on K-Rock.
Everybody has to have a dream, right?
Sure.
So plus size model, Monica weighed 700 pounds.
Oh.
700 pounds.
That's a lot.
It's not thin.
Weighing 700 pounds, supersized model Monica is morbidly obese. But she's got no plans to lose weight.
The ultimate goal is to be 1,000 pounds.
Wait.
She's 700. The ultimate goal, if she can pull it off, is to gain 300 more pounds.
That's really hard to do, I would imagine.
I would think so,
too. 300 pounds.
She's the Tiger Woods of eating. You're doubting her, but if she does it, we should celebrate her.
To be able to take up an entire seat like this one.
She's in a couch, by the way, not a seat. She wants to take up the whole thing.
I'd want to be the fattest woman in the world and become immobile.
That's your goal.
Get her to a psychiatrist.
This is very sad.
It turns good though, Allie.
Oh.
Hold, please.
On an average day, I'd probably eat between 6,000 and 8,000 calories a day.
The 27-year-old has the assistance of boyfriend Sydney.
Can you help me?
She has a boyfriend!
Wait, is that when it turns good to you?
No!
Oh, okay.
Wait, did she say 6,000 to 8,000?
Yes.
Yeah.
But then it was more like 10,000.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought it'd be more.
I mean, I think she started with 6 to 8.
Listen, we're in a pregnant household right now. This seems kind of normal. But anyway, move on.
To see Monica getting bigger just makes me feel proud because she's achieving what she wants to do. I mean, of course, I'm not complaining. I've been into, fat girls ever since I've been into girls. Right now, we are going to make a weight gain shake.
A weight gain shake?
Oh, my gosh.
For 700-pounder.
Basically, I take strawberry Pop-Tarts, heavy cream, ice cream, and 2% milk. Just blend it all together.
I want that guy as my boyfriend.
I was going to say, Kevin, how much did that interest you?
Really
that
good. Shake?
Relationship goals.
Hey, guys, why 2% milk?
I don't know. I don't know. You think you go with whole milk, but I'm not sure. All right, he continues.
Helping Monica pile on even more pounds, Sydney often funnel feeds her.
Funnel feeds. So a giant funnel that goes down into a tube that she sucks on, and he's pouring a whole pitcher of stuff.
They beer bong food.
Yes.
I'm happy that they found each other, but we need an intervention here. I'm with Allie. This is still sad.
Hold, please.
Okay. I started funnel feeding when I met Sid. Sid encourages me because, it's my goal, and he wants to help me reach my goal.
All right, babe, you ready to funnel? All right, you gotta let me know when you've had enough, okay?
All right, so she's sucking on the tube, and then she's getting near the end of the entire pitcher. Could be. And he whispers,
I believe in you.
Oh, my God. What the heck?
Come on, you can do it.
He's the most disturbing part of this piece.
Agreed.
At one point in my life, yes, I did want to be the biggest woman in the world.
All right, this is where it turns.
Okay.
I wanted to be immobile. But now that I'm pregnant...
What?
It's kind of been a wake-up call.
I'm sorry, what?
What?
She got pregnant! Now that she's pregnant. Now I gotta say, this is gonna be disgusting, but it's real. She unzips her pants, and she pulls her entire belly out. And at the very bottom of it is her belly button. So I'm not positive
how
this worked biologically.
Oh, man.
Right.
So that's the good part?
She got pregnant, and she reconsidered everything and decided no longer did she want to be 1,000 pounds.
Okay.
Yes.
I thought she just didn't want to, she wasn't going to be immobile anymore.
Well, I mean, that's also her goal because she's going to have a kid.
I found out about 14 weeks ago, roughly, that I was pregnant. The reason why I do want to lose weight is to be able to be active with my child, be able to get up and play with them and pick up after them. Yeah, you can't do that if you're immobile.
I mean, that's a good point. It's hard to argue that.
So no more funnel feeding.
No more funnel feeding.
What are they doing now? Are they jumping jacks?
I'm hoping to find out today.
That the baby's healthy.
Yeah, that the baby's healthy.
That's all we ask for.
Mm-hmm.
That's all we ask for.
Well, the baby's
funnel feeding.
The baby's got plenty of room to move around. I'll tell you that.
Listen,
baby is living in the biggest mansion ever for an unborn child.
Bunch of nutrients.
No, I watched This Is Us, and that was a big byline. The whole show was about her trying to get pregnant, and they wanted her to lose weight because it's so unhealthy,
right,
for somebody at that weight. And I think the woman on This Is Us is about 400 pounds thinner than her.
The baby looks okay, and the baby's moving a lot.
This is the doctor.
So. Hopefully everything's well. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Oh,
so she's going to have a kid.
Wow.
And I feel like probably the ending of that story that we don't know yet is that she starts losing weight.
Mm-hmm.
And then the boyfriend goes, adios.
No, he takes his funnel with him.
I'm taking my funnel to someone else who appreciates it.
Yeah, that's what he's looking for, man.
Well, 6.7 K-Rock is KROQ. This is the Kevin and Bean Show at 6:54.
And Monday morning means great news. That's coming up right after 7 and right after Allie's What's Happening Here.
You guys know that I'm kind of a Bond head, right?
Please.
Seen,
of course.
Seen a bunch.
You won't stop talking about both of those movies you've seen.
James Bond movies.
You saw two, and it was the first ones you'd seen ever, and that was just last year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or that. Sure.
Just to put it in perspective.
Expert. Right. She's an expert.
I'm an expert, is what I'm saying. You guys also know my love for Phoebe Waller-Bridge, right? Mm-hmm. She's the creator of Killing Eve. She created, stars in, produces one of my favorite shows of the last 5 years, a show called Fleabag on Amazon Prime, which returns for season 2, its final season, on May 17th on Amazon Prime. Did I already watch it because I was privy to watching the UK version? Yes, I did. And can I say without a doubt, it's one of the greatest shows I've ever seen in my life.
What? What's it called? Fleabag?
Fleabag.
It's great.
Oh, it's great. But season 2 that's going to come out, trust me, it involves a priest. This stuff happens, you guys. It is so good.
I believe in you.
My love for Phoebe Waller-Bridge is, it's intense. It's insane. It's emotional. But why would I bring up Bond, you ask? Oh, because the Fleabag and Killing Eve creator is reportedly requested by Daniel Craig himself to liven up the Bond 25 script.
That's high praise.
So Daniel Craig, whose wife, by the way, Rachel Weisz, is a huge Fleabag fan, met with Phoebe Waller-Bridge to discuss how to improve the script, which he thought was in need of some, quote, polishing by adding some of Waller-Bridge's unique style and humor.
Oh,
that's huge.
Wow.
That is.
That is absolutely huge, you
guys.
There
are a bunch of people in Hollywood who are kind of known as script doctors. Sometimes they're not even credited. Sometimes they just get paid. I mean, Thomas Lennon is one of those guys who famously has helped improve a bunch of movies.
Yeah, Babalu Mandel, which is a crazy name, but also in the 90s and 2000s was a script doctor for everything that came out, basically.
I can't imagine a script would not be made better by Phoebe giving it the once-over.
Yeah, be great.
The old 1-2 punch.
Right.
Right. What about Gloria Katz, who recently passed away? She was the one that zhuzhed up a lot of Star Wars.
So she did what?
She zhuzhed it up. And she's the one that is essentially known for creating the Princess Leia that we all came to know and love, of being sassy and brash. And thank God for her, right?
Love it, yeah.
So the script for Bond 25 has not been without its problems. It's now being directed by Cary Fukunaga, but he replaced Danny Boyle. And then other writers were brought in, and then they brought in other writers on top of those other writers. So the date keeps getting pushed back. It's been pushed back several times, now due out April 2020. So we can look forward to it in April 2020.
Allie, you should, and I know you feel like you're all filled up because you've seen those two Bond movies.
Right.
You should at least watch the other Daniel Craig movies.
No, I think
they're all great.
You got it, though. I mean,
I get the gist.
Yeah,
you know,
you know all of them
is what I'm saying.
But what I'm saying is, you have other really, really good James Bond movies that you can watch between now and then.
Right. I think my next move, because I have seen Daniel Craig and I have seen Sean Connery.
Right.
I think my next move is to see a Roger Moore one.
Okay.
I think that's my next step.
Live and let die.
Okay.
Good luck with that.
And then I will see a Pierce Brosnan one.
Okay.
And then I think I'll go back to Sean Connery, because I'm going to tell you right now, Goldfinger was a delight.
Are you going to skip Timothy Dalton altogether?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that's a bad move.
I don't either.
Okay.
I think you're fine without.
You're all good.
Yeah.
T-Dalton.
Is that what we call him?
Yeah. As of now.
No one calls him that.
Here's what I know. Those two Bond movies that I watched, really good. I don't know why people don't talk about them more.
Right? They're such secrets.
Really are. Nobody talks about those. You guys, sad, sad news. After 5 years of online dating, it appears that Dina Lohan has called it quits with her boyfriend, who she never met in person.
I believe
even
in them.
Now.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Sad bassoon.
I'm sorry, what?
Remember when she was on Big Brother Celebrity Edition and she was talking about dating this man for years, and then that came out, and then people were like, well, you've got to meet him. And then
and
well,
he lived all the way in San Francisco, though. Yeah. She lived
way,
in LA. So
all the way in San
that's
Francisco. They still have never met, you guys. Still
they
have
broke
never
up?
Met. But they did break up because she feels he was. He was just using her.
Oh, God!
It's okay. Yeah. He was just trying to get his name in the press and get his name out there. Well, not his face or him in pictures with you, because you never
That's so
met.
Weird.
You
That's
guys,
an awfully long con to now, 5 years in, come to that conclusion.
Yeah, it's all very weird.
If they can't fall in love, what does it mean for all of us?
Right?
It's very true, you guys.
Allie, do you no longer believe in true love?
I mean, it took a hit when I read the story.
Yeah. Definitely.
Oh, sorry.
Oh. Wow. Why the farting at the end of it?
It was odd.
Very odd. Goodness. We're going to talk in a little bit about some TV renewals that you might be interested in. And not just that NCIS renewed for the 17th season story I told you about last week.
I thought about that all weekend.
Right? Me too. I kept thinking, good God.
16 million people on average watch that show.
Unbelievable.
That's crazy.
Unbelievable. But some other renewals that we'll get to in just a bit. But first, some birthdays for you. We've got Emma Watson, Linda Perry, Maisie Williams, Emma Thompson, and Seth Rogen.
Hey, keep listening all week here on the Kevin and Bean
Show.
What are you eating?
Huh? What are you eating?
You swallowing?
I'm not
what's
eating
happening?
Anything.
Swallowing?
Just drinking. Just air.
Okay.
Not only on our show, but on K-Rock all week long, we are giving away tickets to Universal Studios Hollywood. 4 packs of Universal Studios Hollywood California Neighbor Passes, too, at krock.com. So keep listening. At any time, we could ask you to call in win. That will be fun. It's Monday morning. There's plenty of bad news in the world. This time every week, we bring you great news.
When you wake up, all you hear is bad news. So bad it makes you want to hit the snooze. Kevin and Bean can make that go away. It's time for great news today.
Great news!
My story starts with Dr. Ramon Risa. At the age of 2, he was given up to a family in California's Central Valley who already had 14 children.
Oh, my God. How did he become a doctor at age 2?
No, he wasn't a doctor at age 2.
That's the most remarkable part of the story.
At the age of 3, he began picking cotton to help support his adopted family.
While he was a doctor?
He's not a doctor yet.
Oh.
He pushed through all of those obstacles and graduated and became a doctor, and that's the great news. Now, this audio might not sound great news-ish through the middle,
right?
But at the end, it turns and it is great news.
Dr. Ramon Risa was the keynote speaker at the Cesar Chavez Legacy Awards tonight. At the age of 3, Dr. Risa began picking cotton to help support his adopted family. He pushed through all obstacles and graduated from UCI Medical School. Dr. Risa is the subject of a documentary called Ramon Rising. He says his family experienced medical nightmares, including his mother's husband.
Her husband had an accident at a farm. Hit his head. He went to the emergency room on Christmas Eve. They told him there's nothing wrong with him. Go back to work. So he died of a brain hemorrhage. My aunt Helen had breast cancer. She went to go see a doctor. She said they treated her like dirt. She'd rather die. She went home. She died. So I thought...
Okay, I mean, so far, not great.
Seriously, no. Kevin.
But he's seeing this happen.
Well, what am I doing in college? I should go to be a doctor. My people need a doctor. So that was my inspiration.
Dr. Reza treats the children of migrant farm workers in the Central Valley where he grew up. He also travels the country inspiring young people to reach for their dreams.
I mean, that's pretty cool that he watched people like himself get treated horribly, and he never saw a Latino doctor ever. Mm-hmm. So he's like, I'm going to be a doctor, and I'm going to go back to that exact location and help people.
Wow.
Yeah, I would say that turned around.
Yes, thank you.
Technically, it's great news.
And that's my great news.
It is weird, though, at the age of two that you could become a doctor.
Maybe I read that wrong.
And I also feel like his parents are hoarders. They collected kids.
I mean, yeah, that is
14.
They already had 14, and they said, oh, let's get the two-year-old doctor. Let's have him, too.
He's not a two-year-old doctor.
Well, that's what I heard.
He's a doctor now.
All right, you guys. My story was a viral post that people just really latched onto. It's a teacher named Jessie Caton, and she's an eighth grade English teacher that put up something that she had seen on message boards and thought, oh, I'm going to try this in my class. Here's what it is. It is basically a like a board that you make, and you say, I'm great, I'm okay, I'm meh, I'm struggling, I'm not doing great. So all of these different levels of mental health.
Right.
Checkpoints. And what students do at the beginning of the week is they write their name on the back of a sticky note, and then they put up wherever they're feeling. So are they okay? Are they meh? Are they struggling? And it's a great check-in to see how your students are doing. Turns out, after this got like 70,000 hits, the woman that actually created this spoke up. She's like, hey, my name's Erin Castillo. I created this, and here's why. Which, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. But she said, first and foremost, my job is to build relationships with students. As human beings, we're much more open towards people who we know care about us. So if I want my students to listen to me, they need to know that I care about them and have their best interests at heart. So she sees this at the beginning of the week, checks it after they leave for the day, and then she checks in with those students throughout the week. Like, what's going on? Let's talk about this. Why are you feeling this way?
Why are you struggling?
Which is fascinating because it's really bringing her students closer and closer to her. And here's the part that I thought was just wonderful. She said, I'd love to see this in every classroom. There's something more to this than just hanging a poster. Teachers have to have a discussion surrounding the topic of mental health. We have to explain to students that it's okay to not be okay all the time. And as teachers, we have to model how we cope with hard times, which is something that I don't think I ever thought of that my teachers were even thinking about when I was a kid.
Well, that's because when you were a kid, Allie, we had doctors and we had counselors at schools. And they've eliminated all of those. And now teachers, God bless them, have to do everything.
And that's why teachers get paid so well.
Ugh, that's right.
Right. But it's a fascinating way to and so easy just to check in with your students on how they're feeling. And they don't tell all the other students in the class, oh, I'm struggling. Their name is just on the back of that little sticky note. So I think it's just a wonderful idea. And that is my great news.
I think we need to get a poster like that here at work.
I don't think you want that.
And finally, last Wednesday, a story right here in Southern California out of Santa Ana became a national story when Adrian Salgado, who is a gardener in Santa Ana, went in to pick up a check for some work he had done at a family's home. And while he was inside, thieves stole his Toyota pickup truck, which had his cell phone in it, all of his landscaping equipment, and $1,000 of rent money, which he had saved up.
Oh, man.
He came out of the house, saw the truck being taken away, chased the men on foot. They drove off. He went home. He told his daughter what happened. She called 911. Well, the officers were able to track down the truck using the Find My iPhone app. And they found it.
Interesting.
However, all the stuff was missing out of it. And the two suspects that were with the truck each had $500 cash in their pockets, but they said it was their own money. So they couldn't prove that it was the dude's $1,000, even though they had stolen his truck.
Yeah, and you both have exactly $500 apiece?
Yes.
Right?
You see how the police sometimes feel that their hands are tied because it was clearly the stolen money, right? So he had everything stolen. They got the truck back, but no lawnmower, no edger, no hand tools, leaf blower was all gone. So what the police decided to do was take up a collection. They said, you know what? This guy looks like our father, and he has no way to support himself now. So the police put together $1,000, $500 from the Santa Ana police that were investigating the theft, and then the Santa Ana Police Officers Association chipped in the other $500, and they took him to Home Depot so he could start rebuilding his business by buying stuff that he needed.
Awesome.
Home Depot chipped in another $100. They also gave a military discount on all the
purchases. Come
on, Home Depot. Step that up a bit.
Right? Why not head over to Lowe's, see what they're
doing? They gave him $11.
They also gave a military discount on all of the purchases because several of the officers are reservists. One shopper asked what was going on, and when told, she donated another $40. So he was able to kind of get back up on his feet. I mean, he still doesn't have rent money, but I'm saying he did get, he was able to get at least started back on his landscaping business, right?
Wow.
After he got home from Home Depot with the truck and the new stuff, he went right back out to work, by the way, because he still had more jobs to do that day. But, I mean, it's not the happiest ending in the world, but it's a good start and very, very kind people there at the Santa Ana Police Department. They absolutely deserve the love today here on K-Rock. And that's my... So, one day last week, Thursday or Friday, I randomly brought up that I had a racist dog. How did we get on the topic? Do you remember, Allie?
Because I did a story about how dogs... A study found that dogs are the best sensors of whether someone's a good person or a bad person.
There you go.
Yeah.
And I said that may be true, but I think dogs can also be racist. And
I think they can be trained that way, Bean.
I didn't have anything to do with it.
Just saying.
Look, this was my dog, Santa's Little Helper, and she would bark at all black people. And I don't know why. She was very white, by the way. Santa's Little Helper, clearly she was racist.
That's a given,
she was also
yeah.
a super white dog.
The whitest dog ever?
She was very white.
But you say it was Aryan?
I think you could fairly say that she was Aryan.
Wait, only though?
Only black people, yes.
What?
And I'm telling you that it wasn't, and I don't understand why it was. I mean, now granted, I lived in Seattle at the time, so she didn't have a lot of exposure to African Americans because it's the one of the whitest cities in the North America.
Right.
Why you moved
but
there.
When
why
we
you
went there, sure. Mm-hmm. When we did come across an African American person, even on the street, even when she was in the car, just in the passenger seat looking out the window, and we drive by a black dude, she just started howling her head off. There was just something. There she is now. It was the weirdest thing, and I could never she never had a bad experience with a black person. And before you ask,
that must have been so embarrassing.
Of course, yes, of course.
Your dog.
Yeah, because one minute you're walking and she's just so sweet and so cute, and the next minute you're an attack dog. There, people start looking around for the fire hoses. It was terrible.
Jeez.
So I brought that up. And then we started hearing from all sorts of other people, like Caesar, who tweeted at me, "Hey, Bean, I was listening to today's podcast, and I heard you mention that you had a racist dog. Well, you're not alone. I once had a roommate that was an African-American, super nice dude. Honestly, until this day, I don't know why my dog Zoe always barked at the guy every time she saw him. Ever since he moved out, I've never seen her bark at anyone like that."
That makes no sense to me.
It makes no sense at all to me either. That's from Caesar. Here's from Michael. "You're not alone. My 115-pound ex-girlfriend took my 100-pound pit mix on a walk in L.A. while I was out running errands. Found out that Zoe..." Oh, it's another dog named Zoe, by the way. Hmm. "The dog was racist. Only went after black people on their walk. And Zoe was black. Is this black-on-black crime? My girlfriend literally came home and told me that my dog was racist."
What's happening?
What's going on here, you guys?
I mean, I don't even know how that's possible.
I think this is common, guys.
What? But
I've heard
how?
This. We've heard this a lot.
Okay, but how and why?
I don't know. But
it's
I think that there will be
such a weird thing.
I think if we take calls eventually, we'll hear from people that are both owners of racist dogs, but also people who, like, I think there's black people out there who just go, "Yeah, dogs weirdly bark at us more," and I don't know why.
Well, let's get some people on the phone. 1-800-520-1067 if you have a racist dog like Bean.
Or a racist, you've had an experience with a racist
dog.
Sure.
You're like on the other end of Bean.
Right. No,
I could have said that better.
It was 1-800-520-1067. That's the number. Allie, you heard from somebody as well who had a racist dog.
Listen, I could not wait to open this email. I couldn't open it quick enough because the subject line is, "My St. Bernard is a racist bitch." I was like, okay, all right, Erin. So Erin goes on to detail that she has a St. Bernard, loves getting belly rubs, affectionate, everything, great around white people, Hispanic people, until she put an ad in on Craigslist for free dirt. And one of the guys that showed up was an African-American man with dreadlocks. Mm-hmm. And she said her dog went straight Cujo trying to get through the window at this guy. She thought the dog was going to break the window. Just totally freaked out. She couldn't figure out what was going on with the dog. And she never acted like that again until a good friend of hers that she has known for 20 years, also African-American, came over and the dog lost its mind. She said, my dog is a effing racist and I don't know why. I've been telling people ever since that my dog is racist. No one seems to believe me, so I feel you, Bean. And then she goes, P.S., here's a photo of the racist bitch. And it's just the cutest dog just That's sitting on a chair.
An incredible bitch.
It's a very funny email, so thank you, Aaron, for that.
People don't believe you because...
It sounds crazy.
It sounds crazy.
Yeah.
What was she doing with all the free dirt? Why did she need
we should
dirt?
Really investigate that. Zen. Also, why did the other guy tell us his girlfriend's weight?
That was odd.
Do you remember that?
A lot of specific weights.
He was
his
like,
girlfriend
was
dog's weight.
She was a high. Dog was 100.
By the way, she was Aaron was having her yard redone, so she had extra
dirt. That's her story. Nah, she's very accepted. All right.
Pretty
Courtney
quick answer.
Is going to solve this one for us on line one. She's in L.A. She has the perfect explanation of why my dog was racist.
Okay.
I can't wait to hear this, Courtney, because it's troubled me my whole life.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Good morning.
So there's something called an implicit bias. I don't know if you've ever heard of what an implicit bias is or implicit biases. So, yeah, there are subconscious bias towards other people that we're not aware of. People like professors at the university and police officers typically have to take implicit biases training so that they can understand if they're biased towards certain people. But dogs can pick up on our implicit biases.
Bean
subconsciously
racist.
Hates black people and by osmosis racist. And by osmosis the dog can pick up on
but
those.
That couldn't look. That doesn't make any sense.
You
it doesn't make
know.
Any sense. I mean, like I live in a predominantly African American city now, and I walk Linus every single day, and he loves everybody, but no matter who they are, he's very excited to see them and have them, you know, have them acknowledge and play with him.
Maybe you grew a little bit since Santa's Little Helper.
Maybe you don't have that bias towards all black people, but certain ones, like certain black people, maybe put you on edge, and maybe your dog. Can sense that.
It sounds racist. It has to turn around and be on me, by the way.
I mean,
Santa was the racist.
Right, but we're trying to figure out because it doesn't make any sense logically.
Okay.
How a dog.
I mean, you raised that dog,
right?
Did you raise the dog?
I did.
It was
my puppy. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Courtney, I reject you totally, but I love you for listening and calling. Thank you so much. 1-800-520-1067. I can't wait to get to Cindy, who had a dog that hated all white people.
Oh.
So turnabout is fair play. We'll take your calls on racist dogs when we return on K-Rock.
This is Heather Weezer. Let's take one phone call. We're talking about racist dogs. And Heather in Riverside is on the line. Good morning, Heather.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, I have a dog named Zoe, and she totally only barks at black people also.
What's with dogs named Zoe? It's the third one.
This is the third one out of what, four? I'm sorry.
Yeah, she watches TV aggressively, barks at black people on TV also.
What?
Oh, my God. Jeez, I hope you don't watch Blackish.
It's a nightmare. You can't hear a thing.
Oh, the neighbors calling, the cops, the whole thing.
Heather, it's weird. We're going to get to the bottom of it. We're going to figure it out. But give our love to Zoe, but keep her safe and keep her everybody around her safe, okay?
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, thanks for the call. Let's see some Weezer, then we'll take your calls next on the world-famous K-Rock.
Weezer was fantastic at Coachella over the weekend.
They're always fantastic.
Yep, always good, no matter what.
Never disappoint. As opposed to the Kevin Bean Show, where today we bring you racist dogs, we're taking your calls at 1-800-520-1067. Jensen, you were saying you hope to hear from somebody who is on the receiving end of a racist dog, too, right?
Yeah, I want to hear from the other side.
Because like, what does that feel like?
It can't be good.
I don't understand any of this.
No.
I don't either.
Right.
Santa's Little Helper, my dog was racist. I don't know why. Lori, La Habra, line 5, you have a story to share.
Huh?
Take it
have a story to share as well.
Hi.
Lori.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, growing up, we had a little white Cocker Spaniel mix.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm Japanese American,
mm-hmm.
and every time a white person would come in our house, she would lunge at them and snap at them.
Mm. Oh, no kidding! That has to be so embarrassing, right?
Yeah, kind of, because she would pick out that one person and go after them.
So when you had,
I don't know, maybe they forgot to take their shoes off at the door or something. But...
So when you had Asian friends over or African American friends over, dog was totally fine.
Yeah.
Was your dog named Zoe?
No.
That does seem to be the racist name. Okay, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. 1-800-520-1067. Let's go to Willie, East Los Angeles. Line 4, please, up next on the Kevin DeBee Show.
Hey, Willie.
Hey, how's it going?
Let's say P. Yeah,
let's just say P if you don't mind, because we get in trouble.
All right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well, he pees on them, and I kind of did a little experiment, and he does do that on them. So
why?
You know.
Have you ever considered why?
Maybe he's colorblind. I don't know.
Well, I mean, that doesn't really...
He's colorblind.
Yeah, that doesn't
That works the other way.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for the call. Appreciate that. Let's go to Monica, Long Beach, up next, line 6 here on K-Rock.
Hey, Monica.
Hi, good morning.
We're very perplexed by this. Help.
Yeah, do you have any experience with racist dogs?
Yes. One of my closest friends, she's Filipino.
Mm-hmm.
All of my friends are Asian. As soon as they walk in, their German Shepherd, Daisy, she greets them with, like, love and affection. As soon as me and another one of my friends who's Mexican walks in, then she starts being aggressive and then yapping at us and trying to bite us.
That dog hates Mexicans.
That's crazy.
And what do you think that is?
She's not a fan of tacos.
It's very specific.
That's as good an excuse as any, I guess.
Okay.
Let's go to Armando in Glendora. Hi, Armando.
Hey, good morning. How's it going, party people?
Good, thank you.
Good. What happened?
All right, so it's the 4th of July about 3 years ago, and I'm at a Pismo Beach, and I'm walking. I left my party, and I'm walking by myself, and this white little dog just attacked me. Like, it's about a 10-pound dog just attacked me. Out of everybody in that pier, everybody was white except for me.
So that dog just made a beeline for you specifically and no one else on the pier?
Absolutely. No one else on the pier except for me.
And what's your race? What do you look like?
I'm Mexican.
Okay, and the dog knew it.
But how? But what? I mean, but how? Mexican. That makes no sense.
Because the dog doesn't like tacos, Kevin.
And he knew because the dog was like, build that wall, and ran right at him.
Pretty much. I'm pretty sure he had a Trump hat on.
Dog was checking IDs, and he's like, oh, Armando, I see.
Yeah.
Thank you for the call, sir. Appreciate that. Eric writes in from Whittier. When I lived in Monterey Park, which is predominantly Asian, my pit bull, Berlin, would lose her mind when an Asian person would walk in front of the house. She was never aggressive toward anyone else. She made it very clear that she was racist toward Asians. So it seems to be pretty much spread around.
Dogs are racist. Mother effers.
Do you think it has anything to do with that implicit bias that the first caller called about? Or do you think this is too many people?
Honestly, I don't know. It seems like it's too many people.
All right. Let's squeeze in a couple more. Let's try Nathan's line 2, Santa Ana. Up next on the Kevin DeBee Show.
Hey.
Morning.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Good morning.
What's up?
Hey, so I had a dog when I was a kid, a shepherd dog. And the shepherd dog I had did not like fat white people.
No.
It attacks fat white people anytime we got a chance. I'm Hispanic. My son's Hispanic.
So wait, so skinny white people, fine. Fat white people, no?
Yeah, no. Huh. For the reason, if you were over 250, they didn't like you.
Okay. I mean, that's...
And
the reason?
The reason was that... Yeah, the reason my mom told me when I was a kid was because it was a shepherd dog, and I guess it thought that fat white people were cows or sheep.
Come on.
I love his mom. Come on. Let's give it up for Nathan's mom. It's amazing.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. This is the Kevin and Bean Show at 7:53.
We got a huge 8 o'clock hour. I don't think I'm exaggerating when I tell you that a very special guest joining us just after the top of the hour, Danny Goldberg. He's a big deal in the music business in this town, and he is talking about being the manager and advisor for Nirvana coming up just after 8. So that's going to be fascinating. He's got a book out called Serving the Servant. You should definitely read if you're a fan of Kurt and his music. And then right after that, we're going to give away tickets for Kevin Bean's 11th annual April Foolishness happening April 26th at the Microsoft Theater. It's a great lineup with Adam Ray and Felipe Esparza, Greg Fitzsimmons, Eddie Iff, Jamie Lee, Ray Romano, the Kevin Bean Rap Battle, special guests we can't announce. And what are we going to be looking for today, Kevin?
We are going to be looking for a guy walked into a bar jokes.
Oh.
We tried knock knock.
Hated it.
Awful.
Oh, boy.
But your mama kind of turned it
your
around.
Your mama, not
mama
bad.
Hurt. Yeah.
But now a guy walks into a bar.
Guy walks into a bar. Now, it can be a bear, it can be a pope, it can be a pig, it can be whatever walks into a bar, right?
I hope it's the pope and the pig.
Well, you know, there's a lot of variations.
Right, of course.
On the
it doesn't have to be a guy, right?
Yeah, so anybody can walk into a bar. That's what we're going to be looking for in about 30 minutes from right now to win your way into Kevin and Bean's 11th annual April Foolishness. If you have been dawdling and have not yet bought your tickets, you can get those at AXS.com. We'd love to have you there. Allie's here now. Time for another look at what's happening here on a Monday.
Do you think Danny Goldberg, that's going to be coming in to talk about Nirvana, was driving here and heard the segment, Is Your Dog Racist?
Mm-hmm.
And just said, you know what? Head back home.
I wouldn't have blamed him if he did.
It would have been the smart move.
Right.
But I am being informed by Dave that Mr. Goldberg walked here this morning.
Oh, hey. My.
How about that?
What a show-off.
Seriously.
Right?
He's already better than we are.
He lives in Chino Hills.
That's so amazing.
That's quite a walk.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of pets, you guys, do you know what the kind of up-and-coming thing is right now? When you're in a relationship, before you get married, you sign a pet nup.
Oh.
So who gets the pet when you break up?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. Which I've never even thought about this, except that my ex got our golden retriever when we broke up, only because I was moving to L.A., we were in Park City, and I thought, oh, I'm going to have a small little place.
So it made sense for you at that time.
Yeah, the dog needs to be in Park City living his best life. Mm-hmm. Rest in peace, Bailey.
I think this is a great idea because I can imagine out of all the stuff that you split up when you break up, you can't do that with a pet.
Yes.
Unless you want to now get into a custody battle.
And no one wants that, yeah.
And with that, extra weekends and stuff.
That is exactly the point, because the pet custody disputes were involving so much billable time on that single issue.
Wow.
That now lawyers are like, hey, if we want to figure this out, maybe get this done ahead of time, it won't cost you as much in the end. Which is just fascinating to me.
It's a great idea.
A pet nup, you guys.
It's a fine line. Because it's like, who bought it?
Well, who brought it into the relationship?
Yeah.
But then if you get a pet, you know,
together,
do you then talk to your lawyer, hey, I'd like to do an amendment to the pet nup? Because it's just bad. That's bad.
I do feel like if Donna and I were to split up, as, you know, she dreams of, you know, we would... Neither one of us would be willing to give up Linus. You know what I mean?
True.
Like, that would be the sticking point.
So that's why you guys are still together?
I was
going to
say, that's why they're still together.
We have to stay together as long as Linus is alive, yes.
Got it. Well, speaking of divorcing, Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie are officially over.
Wait, they broke up like 10 years ago.
Well, here's the thing. Angelina Jolie filed for divorce 2.5 years ago, but... Brangelina filed a judgment Friday in their divorce that officially restores their single status. They're still not totally divorced yet, you guys. They're continuing to work out the final details regarding custody of their 6 kids and division of considerable assets. So,
Do they have a pet? Does it say?
No, it doesn't say. But this is a long time coming, you guys.
What?
The divorce case has been extended to December 31st of this year as they work out their final agreement. But single status, that's the important thing, guys. Brad Pitt officially single, Angelina Jolie officially single. Go get him.
Shoot
your shots. I don't know. I don't know about any of it.
Are we saying go get him?
I don't think any of us are getting him.
When I read the headline, I was like, is this an invitation?
Yeah, right.
Like, it was like, they're finally single. I was like, has anyone been waiting? Because I think we'd all try.
Yeah.
Either side, really.
For sure. Yeah. So we were talking on Friday about NCIS being renewed for its 17th season, which is just it's just insanity to me. Over the weekend, we found out that NBC's Good Girl has snagged an early third season renewal, which is it's true, which is great news. I love that show. Christine Hendricks, Mae Whitman, Retta, fun show. And then today, Shrill, starring A.D. Bryant, has been renewed for its second season.
Find out our toll-free telephone number. Huh? You're going to need it. It's 1-800-5800-TOM.
No, we're not taking him at all.
No.
Nope.
Mm-mm.
Second season on Hulu, so congratulations for that.
You just asked me that question. Do you listen?
Just me dribbling out a little bit. I had to drain some fluids from my boils.
Oh, my God. We're good on sound drops.
Big mouth broad calling in and running away.
All right.
Out of Tom.
Okay.
Wow.
Oh.
I think we're just going to wrap this up. Please. I had another story, but I don't want to hear the drops, quite frankly.
Sounds like you're horny.
Seth Rogen, Emma Thompson, Emma Watson, Linda Perry, and Maisie Williams.
Hey, Danny Goldberg.
Hey.
Welcome to K-Rock, my friend.
Thank you.
Danny is the president and owner of Gold Village Entertainment. He was the manager for the band Nirvana from 1990 to 1994, friend and advisor to Kurt Cobain and the guys, and he has written a new book about his time with Nirvana. It is called Serving the Servant, Remembering Kurt Cobain, available wherever books are sold. You can actually meet Danny and hear a conversation with him tonight at Book Soup in West Hollywood. Danny, we got to get started with what we were just talking about off the air, which was the first time any of us ever heard Smells Like Teen Spirit on the radio, which would have been right here on K-Rock within a couple of days of it being released, right?
Yes. I just want to say I had a co-manager, John Silva, who's now extremely successful in the business, so I don't want to leave him out of the story, but I wrote the book. And, it debuted actually on a college station here in Los Angeles called KXLU. They wanted to honor the roots of the stations that played indie rock and punk rock. But within a week, K-Rock was one of the first two or three stations that played it. And the first time I heard Smells Like Teen Spirit on the radio was on K-Rock, for sure.
I heard it. We started playing it in October, if I remember correctly, because I think, if I remember the story correctly, my wife and I were driving down to Irvine for one of the Boingo shows around Halloween time. And I heard Jed the Fish play it in the afternoon. And I called him up on the phone and I said, you have to tell me what that song was. It was the greatest song I think I've ever heard in my life. And I feel like that was a lot of people's reactions to the first time they ever heard that song. It was so exceptional. You knew that it was something unlike anything you'd ever heard before.
Yeah. Kurt Cobain had a vision of combining the integrity and rebellious spirit of punk rock with pop melodies and some heavy metal instrumentation, and he somehow fused these things into a new sound that it really exploded. It was an amazing thing to be part of. It just exploded all over the world very, very quickly.
I know you say in the book, but tell people why it took so long for you to write about it.
Well, first of all, you have to have the time to write a book. It's I write my own books. There's no co-writers or ghostwriters or anything, and it was a time in my life when I could do it. The first decade after Kurt died, it was just too painful for me. I didn't even listen to Nirvana music or read or anything about it. And then over the last decade, it just seemed to me two things became clear to me. One is that there were younger people that wanted to talk to me about Nirvana, which blew my mind. People that weren't even alive when Kurt died. And the other thing was that it seemed to me like his image had been overwhelmed by the tragedy of his death, and which obscured the brilliance and beauty of his short life. And I just wanted to paint a portrait of the guy that I knew. It's not journalistic. It's subjective. I'm an unreliable narrator. And it's not a biography. It's just about the 3.5 years between the time when I first met him with the other guys in the band until his death.
What was your first impression of him?
Well, he's very quiet in the first meeting until he piped up and said exactly what he wanted to do about how to deal with record companies. And it took a while for me to realize that he was so brilliant and made all of the decisions. So I would say maybe it took till my second meeting that I really internalized who he was in the band.
I think a big part of reading the book, too, is like the duality of Kurt Cobain that you touch on so much. And it's almost like that meeting, which is when you watch him on TV or you saw him in performances, you kind of thought he was like on the seat of his pants. But you talk about how he was calculated pretty intensely.
Oh, there's no question that Nirvana's success was no accident. He planned every detail of the band's career. If you read his journals, you can see that years in advance he was listing constantly 50 albums that influenced them. He had imaginings of marquees with Nirvana having a sold-out show. And in the albums that he cited, most of them were indie punk records like the Melvins or Flipper or Black Flag, but it always included like a couple of Beatles records.
Yeah, or the Chipmunks Beatles record,
He had four copies. Ray Farrell, who was a sales guy at Geffen in those days, dealing with the indie stores, told me him and Kurt would just talk about their record collections. Mm-hmm. That was how he could connect with them. And he went over to Kurt's apartment at one point and found four unopened vinyls of the Chipmunks Sing the Beatles, one of which
God.
He gave Ray. Just in case he wore out the other three, he'd have a fourth one.
You got to have a backup. Yeah. And man, did Kurt Cobain love ABBA. I think that would surprise a lot of people too, right?
Well, he loved great songs. You know, culturally, he identified with punk. He was a rebel. He had contempt for the stereotype of the macho front man. He was politically what we would call on the left, and he had contempt for a lot of kind of corporate grandiosity, including in the music business. But he loved a good song. Mm-hmm. He was a great songwriter, and he respected art. So he could differentiate between the kind of cultural baggage of some kinds of music and just the excellence of it. And he listened sometimes to Black Sabbath also. You know, his great love was the punk rock culture, and he saw himself as part of it, and he always honored it by the bands that he made sure opened to Nirvana on tour and the T-shirts he would wear when he did a TV show. But musically, he was very much of a Renaissance man.
A lot of people see their name on the marquee ahead of time, and they know they're going to blow up, and they just don't. How is he different?
He's more talented.
Just talented. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a God-given gift. You know, why is LeBron James better than everybody else? You know, some people are born with that.
This is the
he
voice
worked
of
very,
Danny,
very hard. Yeah. He had a
Danny
great
Goldberg
work
is here with us on the Cafe de Beach, and we're talking about his book. Sorry to interrupt, Danny. Called Serving the Servant, Remembering Kurt Cobain. In stores available wherever you buy your books. You can meet him tonight at Book Soup in West Hollywood. You know, you talk about the macho frontman image that he liked to stay away from. You tell a couple of interesting stories in the book about the feud he had with Axl Rose that I had kind of forgotten about. What started it?
Well, I don't know if it's exactly a feud, but there definitely was a period where they didn't like each other. I think, you know, in my mind, you know, when the record was first making the rounds at Geffen Records, you know, labels would have an advance copy that they'd give to press people and programmers and so on 6 or 8 weeks early. Apparently, Axl Rose liked it, and he wore a Nirvana hat in a Guns N' Roses video, and that was actually a talking point briefly for one of the promo guys that was trying to get metal stations to play it.
Right.
But you know, Kurt really had strong views about sexism and racism, and had been kind of just offended by some of the Guns N' Roses lyrics and the image. And Nirvana came from a culture that was almost antithetical to that. And I remember when, after Nevermind came out, within weeks it was a very big buzz record, and they played the Los Angeles show a few weeks after that. I'm getting mixed up in my mind whether I think it was the Palladium.
Okay.
Sometimes I conflate.
Which is unbelievable to think about now, Nirvana playing the Palladium.
Yeah. The Palace. It was either the Palace or the Palladium. And Eddie Rosenblatt, who's the president of Geffen, came up to me after the show. And people, it was the big buzz show. A lot of musicians were there and movie stars and people from the business. It was the place to be. And he came up to me and he says, "Look, I've got Axl Rose with me. Can Axl would like to meet Kurt?" So, because they were on the same label. I mean, Nirvana Records came out on an imprint called DGC, but it was part of Geffen Records, and a lot of the same people, same president. So I go into the dressing room, and I tell Kurt, and he just rolls his eyes, and he says, "Oh, man, I don't want to meet Axl Rose." So I said, "All right, let's just, we don't want to offend the president of the label. I'll give him passes, tell him you need 5 minutes to change clothes, and then you and I can go out the back door. So he'll come back into the dressing room. It's not like we kept him out, but you don't have to say hi to him." So we did that, and I never got grief from Eddie, you know, the record company president, about it afterwards. But I don't think it left a great taste in Axl Rose's mouth.
I can see that.
You know, he probably...
He's Axl Rose, for God's sake.
At his peak.
Yeah.
At his absolute peak. So there was that sort of atmosphere. And then later on, by August of 92, just a couple of weeks before Courtney gave birth to Kurt, you know, their daughter Frances Bean, there was this very mean article in Vanity Fair about Courtney that, you know, accused her of being very irresponsible while she was pregnant. And Axl Rose on stage said these very mean things about Kurt and Courtney, and said they should go to jail and things like that. Not really what you want to hear, especially when you're dealing with all sorts of stress about this. So the incident that has been widely discussed, but I was there for it at the MTV Awards, which was like the next week, was that we were sitting in an area backstage, you know, for the artists to have some food and catering and so on. You know, there were rehearsals, a long day leading up to the MTV Awards. They called them the VMAs, I guess.
Yeah.
And so we're sitting there, a few of us with Kurt and Courtney, and then Axl Rose and two huge bodyguards and his girlfriend at the time, who I think's name was Stephanie Seymour.
That's right.
Come backstage. So Courtney, who's aware that Axel had just said these insulting things, pipes up, "Hey, Axel, want to be godfather to our baby?"
That's very Courtney.
So Stephanie Seymour, not realizing who she was dealing with, said to Courtney, "Oh, are you a model?" And then without missing a beat, Courtney says, "Are you a brain surgeon?"
Oh, my God.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
So, I love it.
So
that's crazy.
So Axl Rose then came over to our table with these two gigantic, like, WWF-type bodyguards and says to Kurt, "Tell your woman to shut up or I'm going to push you down to the pavement." So we're all trying not to burst out laughing. And Kurt, like, mocking him, says to Courtney, you know, "Shut up, B."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm on commercial radio here. And
you can't say bitch. And, just so you know.
Oh, we can? Yeah. Oh, good to know. Good to know. Like, making fun of it. We all crack up, and Axel huffed away. And then, you know, later on the broadcast, Dave Grohl mocked Axel. It was that was the drama. And then Kurt talked about it in the press a lot because it became an example to him of the contrast between what he cared about.
Right.
He was brilliant with the media. So on the one hand, he was upset by it. On the other hand, by the time he got to the press tent after the show, he developed a narrative that he was talking about for months because it served who he was, yeah. The contrast.
Sure.
So that was the quote-unquote feud. My guess is if Kurt were alive today, they probably would get along. From what I've read about Axl Rose, you know, only a handful of people have shared that experience. But at the time, there were two conflicting versions of what a rock star was,
sure,
what a front man was. And Kurt really created a new model, a non-macho, caring model who could also rock as hard as anyone. And that was a big part of what he contributed to me, not only the music, but kind of a cultural alternative to the macho stereotype. And Axl Rose was the perfect foil for it.
Yeah,
you got to take a break. That is a fantastic story, and it's one of many that you'll find in the book. Again, it's called Serving the Servant, Remembering Kurt Cobain, available at all book retailers right now. More with our guest, Danny Goldberg, when we return right after this on K-Rock.
That was a very confusing commercial.
Really?
I don't know what we're doing.
What are we selling?
do we have to pinky swear somebody to get a room at a Hilton?
Not sure.
I lost it. Yeah.
Guys, in just a couple of years, the great Kurt Cobain will have been dead as long as he was alive. I know that is hard to believe that much time has passed by, but a man who knew him well in the last 4 years of his life, his former manager of Nirvana, Danny Goldberg, is in studio with us here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Again, you can meet him and see a discussion with Danny tonight at Book Soup in West Hollywood at 7 p.m. But even if you can't make that in person, you've got to get the book. Any K-Rock fan is going to love this book. Danny, you brought up Courtney Love at the end of the last segment. Did you feel, as I did, that she, in a lot of Nirvana fans' minds, somehow became a villain after his death, and to the most part, unfairly?
Well, definitely it was unfair. It's so hard to tell. In the, you know, social media was just starting to emerge. I remember there was an AOL message board about the music business that had an enormous amount about me and Courtney and everybody else after Kurt's death, and that was the forerunner of Twitter in a way. And so, you know, a few hundred people can make a loud noise.
Seems like it's
and
a tremendous
it doesn't amount. Necessarily represent millions of fans. All I know is that Kurt loved Courtney and vice versa, and that, you know, I liked Courtney right away when I met her. And during
you were in the room when they met, by the way, I should mention.
Well, they had met before briefly over the but after Nevermind came out, the band did some clubs again to show that they weren't, you know, John Silva, my partner, wanted to make sure they showed that they were being faithful to their roots and everything like that. And they played a club in Chicago called the Metro that held about 500 people. And by this time, Smells Like Teen Spirit had been on the radio and on MTV for weeks, and you couldn't get in. It was an exciting madhouse. And Courtney walked into the dressing room afterwards and introduced herself to me. And about 10 minutes later, I noticed she was sitting on Kurt's lap. And they both had this very happy expression on their face, like the proverbial cat that swallowed the canary. And they were together that night and for the rest of Kurt's life. So I was there the night that they got together romantically. They had met a few times. Gotcha. In the
what was it like?
Couple of years.
I was, when reading the book, what's it like managing an artist who breaks their equipment every show? Like, well, that can't be easy.
Well, I
or,
was
or cheap.
I was 40 years old and had been in the business for a while. Mm. My role was to be the older guy that kind of knew the music business. So the tour manager and other people had to deal with that, and I could just sort of be in my office oblivious to it.
But and you never had to
I
have
think
a
it was very inconvenient, especially because Kurt was left-handed.
Yeah,
so replacing a left-hand guitar was harder. But they somehow figured out how to do it.
Funny.
And it became a staple of the show.
Yeah.
For people that have seen all the documentaries, all the movies, have read the journal, have done everything that they think that makes them this huge Nirvana fan, what would you say that might surprise someone that they don't know about Kurt Cobain?
Oh, goodness. I'll tell you, he was so nice as a human being, you know, and because the nature of his art form involved rebelliousness and sarcasm, and that was part of who he was. He wasn't pretending to love punk culture. He was a product of it. But privately, he was so thoughtful and nice to other people. He had a lot of darkness inside him. Obviously, he was prone to depression, had drug problems, and killed himself. There's no papering over that. Mm-hmm. But
at his core.
But the darkness was interdirected to other people. You know, in doing the book, I interviewed, 40 people that kind of I knew at the time, worked with at the time, to both get other voices into the story and to help me remember things. Mm-hmm. And so many people had these stories about something very thoughtful and considerate that Kurt did. So that's the dirty little secret about Kurt. He was a really nice guy.
Danny, you were involved in a couple of different attempts at interventions with Kurt, and that is difficult under any circumstance. He was particularly resistant to getting help. He did try, though, on numerous occasions, but for whatever reason, it just didn't stick, right?
He tried a number of times. I was part of two interventions, but there were many other less formal conversations over the years. You know, a bunch of us realized that he was doing heroin in January of 92 when the band did Saturday Night Live for the first time, a few months after Nevermind came out. And then for the next several years, it was always a struggle. He hated the idea of being a junkie or doing drugs, and he didn't want to have that out there to make any fans feel that it was cool. But he was in a lot of pain. He was in physical pain. He had a chronic stomach problem. He was in emotional pain. He'd had a very difficult childhood. And, I'm a big believer in the 12-step program. A lot of people very close to me have had their lives really saved by it. And he was certainly introduced to it on a number of occasions, but he just didn't embrace it. And, it's not for everybody, unfortunately, and it's hard to find a plan B. You know, some people use antidepressants, some people meditate and pray, some people just somehow have the willpower, but many people don't.
Do you think the massive success that they had added to that?
I don't know.
Because it seems like it's sort of the opposite of what he wanted, and yet he wanted it as well.
Well, he had definitely done heroin before he was successful. There's no question about that.
I'm saying the depression and everything else.
He was prone to depression long before
in early
he was
sessions.
Successful.
Yeah.
In the demo sessions, after Bleach, Butch Vig, who later produced Nevermind, had produced several demos of songs that ended up on Nevermind, including Lithium and Polly. And Butch said the first time, Kurt just zoned out and didn't talk for like 20 minutes. And he said, "What's wrong?" And Chris says, "Oh, he just gets like that sometimes. He'll come out of it." And Chris had known him, since high school. So he was prone to depression from a very young age. He tried heroin at a very young age. Of course, once you're famous and have money, it's a lot easier to get heroin.
Sure.
But I think that the psychological issues he had predated fame. Fame had its downsides. He didn't like the invasion into his personal life by the media, especially. Didn't love being recognized every time he went to a store. But he wanted to be famous, and he wanted to stay famous. It's not like he got famous and then said, "Oh, my goodness, this isn't what I wanted." When it came time for, immediately he puts together an anthology, after Nevermind happens, of his earlier work. He's 24 years old, and he's already anthologizing his earlier work because he knew who he was as an artist and has Incesticide come out. And then when it came for In Utero, you know, yes, he had Steve Albini produce it to honor the punk roots and certain sounds that were in his head, but then he had Scott Litt, who'd worked with REM, remix the singles. Kurt decided what the singles were. Kurt decided what the mix was. Kurt decided what the videos were.
He edited Smells Like Teen Spirit.
He re-edited the Smells Like Teen Spirit video because he didn't like the first edit. So, you know,
he was in control.
He wanted to stay successful, but he didn't like all the byproducts of that success. But he never stopped competing because he was complicated and he had contradictions.
Yeah.
Well, we have unfortunately seen so many of these suicides here at K-Rock, you know, just in the last couple of years with Avicii and with Chester Bennington and with Chris Cornell. And it never is not a shock. It's always such a shock when it happens. And I'm sure that's how you felt and the rest of the team felt because you were, you know, with him so much and close to him so much, and you could see that there were problems, but it had to have been such a stunning bit of bad news to wake up to that day. I mean, you certainly didn't imagine that would happen.
I feared it would happen because 6 weeks before he died, he almost killed himself with an overdose in Rome, and I knew he hadn't conquered the drug problem, really gotten sober or anything like that. But you're exactly right. The reality of it was just a horrible, horrible shock. And look, a pretty good friend of mine just killed himself last week, who's not a celebrity. And
it's Gary Stewart, I imagine.
You know, and you know, it's just a mystery of the human mind that is so heartbreaking when especially when someone you love does it. And as far as I could tell, psychiatrists and spiritual leaders and philosophers haven't figured out how to stop it. You just have to love people and get them any kind of treatment you can. But, you know, people sometimes do it, and it's just a mind-blowing tragedy.
There is so much light in the book as well. Like you said, when you sat down, Mr. Goldberg, you know, you wanted to make sure that people knew the other side. Don't let his life be overshadowed by his death. And there are some great stories that we haven't even gotten a chance to get to. You'll love the chapter on the MTV Unplugged sessions, by the way, which were just fascinating to me. The whole book is great, you guys. You really ought to check it out if you're a fan of Nirvana like we are. Serving the Servant, Remembering Kurt Cobain, author Danny Goldberg. You can meet him tonight at 7 o'clock at the Book Soup in West Hollywood. He'll be in conversation and signing your copy. Danny, so grateful you made the trip. Thanks so much for coming in.
I can't thank you enough for having me on.
He walked from New York. Guys,
he did. That's a long way.
All right. We are going to free up the phone lines right now at 1-800-520-1067. As you know, the Kevin and Bean 11th Annual April Foolishness Comedy Show is happening on April the 26th. We are looking for you. Kevin, this time around, what do we want?
Well, this is Whiplash Radio for sure, but a guy walks into a bar any version of that type of joke.
It could be a rabbi, it could be the Pope, it could be a bear. Whoever walks into the bar, we want to hear your joke.
Hopefully all three together.
I'd like to hear how that joke ends. 1-800-520-1067. You could win your tickets. It is interesting that we have a policy 51 weeks a year to not let people tell jokes on the air.
Because people can't tell jokes.
And then
myself included, when you have an actual joke, it's just sort of hard to do the real setup and really deliver the punchline.
Except when it comes time to April Foolishness, all of a sudden phones are wide open. Kevin and Bean's 11th Annual April Foolishness is happening April 26th at the Microsoft Theater. It's going to be a great night of comedy, including the Kevin and Bean rap battle, which, by the way, Jensen, I think we have to get back to, start prepping for that again. You definitely want to be there. You can buy your tickets at AXS.com with proceeds going to great local charities. Or you can win them right now if you're on the phone. It's time to play A Guy Walks Into a Bar.
A guy walks into a bar. Come on, tell the joke. A guy walks into a bar.
I hope Danny Goldberg heard that, and now Omar gets a record deal.
Would that be rape?
Yeah. Oh.
That's fine. We've heard kind of paper legs. All right, Kevin, let's
you can just turn that. Paper
legs. Listen, that's his intro, the whole thing.
Okay.
I'm just trying to play it.
Jokes! So if you're the best one, you stay on the line, right?
Yeah, whoever we like best. Mm-hmm. If you don't beat the person before you, then you hang up and we move on.
Okay, let's. Who's up first?
All right, we're going to start with Alex in Riverside. Good morning, Alex.
Morning, bubble down.
To you as well.
What's your joke, sir?
Okay, my joke. A horse walks into a bar. The bartender says, "Why the long face?" The bartender says, "I'm drinking alcohol."
Oh, sorry.
Everyone, hold on.
I thought that was the end of the joke. No. Why the long face? All right, what does the horse say?
Start again.
That's on us.
A horse walks into a bar. Mm-hmm. The bartender says, "Why the long face?" The horse says, "My crippling alcoholism is destroying my life and ruining my family."
A guy walks into a bar.
Well, you can't lose if you're first.
I gotta be honest, I liked it.
That's a great joke. You took it to the next level.
I did too, yeah.
I always thought it was an aardvark that walked into the bar with the long face, by the way. No? It's a horse.
Oh, now we're critiquing.
What the hell?
It
could be whatever.
You.
Okay. I love Alex, and he's the winner as far as I'm concerned.
Let's go to Anthony in La Mirada. Can you beat that?
Yes.
Okay, let's hear it.
Okay, the past, present, and future walk into a bar. It was tense.
Okay. A guy walks into a bar.
I enjoy that one very much.
Oh,
what am I having?
Jensen,
Got it. Okay.
Jensen mouthed words tense to me. Past tense.
Well, bigger problem is I've heard that joke with like wigwam, teepee, but so I was thinking T-E-N-T-S, and I was like, what? Did he mess up the joke?
All right, so does he beat Alex or no? I don't think so, right?
Alex delved into the horse's actual issues.
Yeah.
Okay. No.
So far, Alex is the leader.
Let's go to Rich in Montebello. Good morning, Rich.
What's up, party people?
Good morning.
All right, so a Russian spy, a sexual predator, and a billionaire walk into the bar. The bartender says, "What can I get you, Mr. President?"
Boom.
Ooh. A guy walks into a bar.
Fresh as today's headlines. Mm. I still think I'm with the psychoanalysis of the horse, though.
I'm going horse, something I've said many times.
And we had to give him a second chance because Bean was jumping all over
it. Yeah, and he still killed it.
All right, Steve and Downey, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you guys doing today?
We are good, thank you.
Okay, so a guy walks in a bar and says, "I need a beer and a shot before any problems start." The bartender says, "That'll be $10. The guy says, "That's when the problem starts."
Horse.
I'm not going to do that chant.
Still again. Horse. Let's skip line five, Kevin. That's an old boring joke. Let's go to the James on line six in West Carolina.
These other ones are so exciting.
James, hi.
A grasshopper walks into the bar. The bartender looks at the grasshopper and says, "Wow, what a coincidence. We have a drink named after you here." The grasshopper says, "What, a Kevin?"
A guy walks into a bar.
What a Kevin, a grass?
Because his name is Kevin. He's not a grasshopper.
See?
And a grasshopper used to be a drink my dad ordered. Come on.
I don't get it.
Come on. He's very disappointed.
Now we're essing on his dad.
I just don't get the joke.
Horse.
All right. Can we try Jesse and Sherman?
Wait, was the grasshopper's name Kevin?
Yeah.
Yes.
Which I don't understand. Why?
Because that's his real name.
So he had a drink named after him because his name is Kevin. Now at least I get the joke.
Yeah.
Still horse, though.
Yeah. All right, Jesse and Sherman Oaks, good morning.
Good morning. What's up, everyone?
We're having trouble today, but go ahead.
Hopefully I can help.
All right, okay.
So a mushroom walks into a bar, sits down the bar, and asks the bartender, "Hey, can I have a drink?" The bartender turns around, looks at him, says, "Get out of here. We don't serve your kind." The mushroom says, "But why? Can I have the drink, please?" Bartender says, "Get out. We don't serve your kind." The mushroom replies, "But why? I'm a fun guy."
Mushroom.
He's a fun guy.
A guy walks into a bar.
Doesn't beat horse.
Horse.
Or just go to Alex.
One more.
Final contestant.
All right, Bob in Manhattan Beach. Good morning.
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
Good, thank you.
So Bono and The Edge walk into a bar, and the bartender says, "Ah, not you two again."
That was my horse.
Sound.
That was short and sweet. I didn't hate it, but it's no horse, ladies and gentlemen. It's no horse. Go back to Alex. He overcame incredible, incredible difficulty to get his joke on the air, but it all paid off because he's going to Kevin Bean's April Foolishness on the 26th at the Microsoft Theater with a great lineup of comedy, plus the Kevin Bean rap battle and surprises.
That's not a horse.
That's not a horse.
Thank you, Alex.
Did I win?
You won.
Yes, you won. Sorry, I thought we made that clear. Thanks for playing A Guy Walks Into a Bar.
Thanks for playing the game.
A guy walks into a bar.
Jokes. Jokes.
It is 8:53.
Hold on. Let me get this music. Hold. Okay, there we go.
You all right?
All good.
What's going on? Kevin, did you drive here directly from Coachella?
No, I did not, Bean.
Seriously? You got some sleep?
I got a little sleep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Allie is here with What's Happening on a Monday.
You guys, I just came across this thread. As we know, Game of Thrones was back last night. People are losing their minds because they couldn't wait for the show to be back. This is a thread from Dan Fogelman. You might know him as the creator of This Is Us. Did a movie called Life Itself that if you haven't seen, grab at least two packs of tissues because you're going to be bawling the whole time. It's no surprise to anyone that I love Dan Fogelman.
Right.
He does a thread. He starts with, anyone want a quick personal story about George R. Martin, the creator of Game of Thrones? Right. So I'm like, yeah, I do, which I said to the tweet. Then I was like, oh, I scroll? Okay. So here's how it starts. Over a year ago, a close buddy and I get to see Springsteen's Broadway show. It's a big deal for us. My buddy Alex gets there super early. He's excited, calls me as I'm in a cab heading there. He's talking a mile a minute. While waiting outside of the theater, he has spotted George R. Martin. He says he's going to go talk to him. I beg him not to. He hangs up on me. Now, a little bit about Alex. He's larger than life, handsome, charming as hell, with the best head of hair you've ever seen. He's also obsessed with Game of Thrones like no one you've ever known. And he never listens to anyone, so I know he's going to go accost George R. Martin. I arrive at the theater. Alex is waiting, bursting with energy as always, and he tells me he approached him, got a picture, and somehow, miraculously, got his cell phone number. George was with his wife and told Alex they usually go for pizza after a show. So Alex says to him, well, maybe we'll join you. Alex and I both chuckle at his chutzpah. We see Springsteen the entire show. Alex is debating when to text George. I beg him, just let it go. I know George will never reply and Alex is just going to be disappointed. The show ends. It's amazing. Alex, as I knew he would, immediately texts George. And to my absolute shock, George R. Martin writes Alex back. He tells us to meet him at a local pizza joint. Alex and I go in. I'm convinced it's still going to end badly. A weird miscommunication. We're going to get ghosted something. At least it'll be a funny story. And then George and his lovely wife arrive. We eat pizza for an hour or two. George and I talk shop. Alex tries to play it cool, only makes a few nerdy Game of Thrones references. And then at meal's end, George gives Alex a Westeros coin. Alex reacts stronger than is appropriate for a 40-something man. We all part ways. Alex is giddy. Here's what George R. Martin didn't know that night. My handsome, well-haired, larger-than-life pal Alex was battling a random case of stage 4 lung cancer. He will pass away later that year. I will dedicate the season 3 premiere of This Is Us to him. But for that entire year, Alex never stops talking about his night with his hero. And in turn, I will never stop telling that story.
That's wonderful.
Oh my gosh.
I believe in you.
I'm just saying, like, just a reminder to people.
That's amazing.
How niceness goes a long way.
And you never know what someone's going through.
Absolutely.
That's amazing. I love that.
What's the point of this story?
Oh my God, kid, you little brat. The point of the story is it's beautiful.
Fatality. Head up your
ass.
What? I don't know. You guys are playing drops at the same time. It's a lot.
What did you say?
Not involved that time at all.
No.
Well, so we could have had three drops at once, but instead we only had two. Oof. It is a beautiful story, you guys. That's all I'm
saying. This has been established.
All right.
It's a beautiful story.
Guys, Shazam.
Yes.
Stayed top of the box office, charting with $25 million in its second weekend. I shouldn't say charting. Because it sounds like what? All right, here's the thing.
You okay?
It did well, and that's wonderful. And it's made just under $95 million in
feisty.
$259 million in total. Second place, Little, which hit its expectations with a $15.5 million opening. Ooh, Hellboy didn't do as great. You guys coming in third with 12 million, followed by
a whole lot of hullabaloo.
Pet Sematary and Dumbo. I don't like you guys at all. Just thought I'd read that wonderful.
That was a beautiful story.
And,
what's going on?
Well, what's going on is I work with animals, sir.
Someone call someone!
I will call someone that cares because no one in this room does. It was just a lovely thread about a wonderful man and what he did just without even knowing that changed the last year of someone's life. And I think
and
that's
this
beautiful.
This just became one of the worst days I have had in quite some time.
Well, you're alive, aren't you, sucker?
Call now. 1-800.
Nope. No. I don't think we're taking calls.
I've never felt my boner go away so quickly. See? Agree, lady. Some birthdays for you. Emma Thompson, Emma Watson, Linda Perry, Maisie Williams, Seth Rogen.
You guys remember this morning when Ruben came in and tanked off?
Yes.
I do.
Well, Ruben, for folks who weren't with us, which is everyone, Ruben and Beer Mug drove to work this morning from Coachella.
Yeah. It's not a great plan.
They're still wearing their shorts and T-shirts, and in Muggs' case, tank top in Ruben's case. And by the way, that's a tough look for a 100-plus-year-old man.
Right?
That is a tough look.
He looks like a Shar Pei.
Oh, my God.
When you pass 80, you do not wear that shirt.
You don't wear a tank top. That's correct. For sure. So, yeah, it's there's a little bit of a post-Coachella...
hangover?
Yeah, hangover is a good word for it, I think. Literally, that's the case for Ruben and Beerman. All right, Allie is here. She's fine, although you wouldn't know it from today. Let's take another look at what's happening, shall we?
Yeah, well said on your part, right? Who's with
right.
me? Guys, Morrissey, first tour of Canada in 15 years.
Canceled?
It's on hold right now.
Oh, come on, I was kidding.
This is due to a medical emergency stemming from an accident incurred while traveling in Europe.
Was the accident that he woke up and realized he didn't want to play a concert?
I don't know, you guys. It was scheduled to kick off yesterday with a pair of shows in Vancouver. Those gigs canceled, on hold, as well as dates in Calgary, Edmonton, Winnipeg. They're being postponed until October. The statement reads, spirits are high and the artist is on the path to a swift recovery. All tickets will be valid for the new dates and exchanges will not be necessary. Thank you for your understanding. Maybe hold off on the exchanges will not be necessary until October.
Allie, I'm
He's not
exaggerating
reliable
when I say that he has canceled literally hundreds of concerts, right?
You're not exaggerating, because since 2012, he has canceled or postponed 141 concerts.
Oh, that's insane.
141.
And the average artist in the last 7 years, would you say, has probably canceled two?
Tops.
Yeah, and those were the just shows that Allie had tickets to.
Right. You aren't wrong. And most of those are postponements, let alone
right.
cancellations yeah. in whole. So
you said 141. What did you mean?
I said he's canceled or postponed 141 concerts since 2012.
That's a real D-bag move.
Also, I assume if you're a fan of his, you know that that's when you get a ticket,
yes.
it's 50-50.
Absolutely.
Right?
Okay. I would think you'd know that.
Hey, when he was due to headline Acoustic Christmas,
sure.
the morning we made the announcement, we said, and allegedly, possibly, but probably not Morrissey. I mean, that's how we announced it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't get your hopes up.
He didn't play.
But he was great. Oh.
He no. didn't. He
right. Spoiler alert.
He okay. My bad.
Unbelievable, you guys.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
That's as Jensen said. I'm sorry. I'm a fan of Morrissey's. That's a D-bag move. It's
yeah.
crappy way to treat your fans.
I believe in you.
I don't know if we believe in him, you guys. So if you know Phoebe Waller-Bridge, you know that she is beyond talented. She created the show Fleabag, which is one of the greatest shows ever. Season 2 coming to Amazon Prime May 17th. And created Killing Eve, which all of us are obsessed with.
Oh, so
just
good.
A fantastic show. So it probably wouldn't shock you that Daniel Craig himself reached out to Phoebe Waller-Bridge to see if she could kind of liven up the script of the upcoming 007 installment. This is incredibly impressive. According to The Observer, the comedian, writer, and actress was specifically requested by Bond himself, Daniel Craig, who met with her and said, you know, script needs some polishing. Let's get some of that Phoebe Waller-Bridge unique style and humor put in there.
That's impressive.
She played a droid in one of the Star Wars movies, too, didn't
she? Yes, thank you. She was in Solo, A Star Wars Story. She played the droid L337.
Who was the comedy relief of that movie.
Absolutely. She was in love with Donald Glover's character, of course, playing a young Lando Calrissian. It was a great, great part of the movie. What? Why are you laughing? Why are you laughing?
No, nothing. Go ahead.
All right. So anyway, that's pretty cool. Pretty cool news, you guys, right there.
They're not gonna yuck up Bond, are they?
I don't think so, but I think
I think we're looking for up.
There is a yuck up Bond.
I mean,
you're saying you don't want that kind of?
Yeah, that's not what we're looking for. Comedy, Bond.
There is a yuck up Bond. There's a Casino Royale, right?
You're talking about the Woody Allen
one? Yeah, the Woody Allen one.
Yeah. I don't think that's where we're at in the franchise.
I think all the earlier Bonds, though, had funny little... Like, from my extensive Bond watching knowledge, all of them had very funny, quirky moments. And by all, Goldfinger made me chuckle a couple times. Right?
Any good movie should have some...
Something that makes you...
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Maybe not yuck it up.
Right.
But...
It doesn't need to be slapstick.
I don't know if Fozzie Bear's going to be involved, but he should be. Right? A little pork pie hat. Never hurt nobody. What? You guys, Backstreet Boys celebrated the 20th anniversary of their classic song, I Want It That Way, over the weekend. They had a big weekend of a handprint ceremony on Friday at Planet Hollywood Resort and Casino. Then they had the keys to the city given to them, and they presented a check donation to the Boys and Girls Club of Southern Nevada to the event. But I think the biggest story is... Our own Jensen Karp went there for his baby moon.
That's
him
right.
And his lovely wife, Danielle Fishel, went to see them performing for what's going to be their last shows there.
That's right. We went and saw their residency.
And?
They're great. The Backstreet
so
Boys.
So fun, right?
They're very fun. They also, it was a shock because like they use no vocal track, no backing track. So it's just them singing.
Yeah.
And I was shocked to see that most of them could really sing.
And you had said before, like, oh, I know I want it that way. But weren't you shocked
like
at how many songs you're like, wait, this is them? This is them?
And they have a ton of fun on stage. They don't take themselves seriously. It's
See?
Great.
Look at you.
Hashtag
going on your...
Backstreet for Weenie.
I don't know if we're doing that.
The one thing
Backstreet
I will say...
Backstreet for Weenie. Hashtag.
No.
That's not what you're saying? Yeah.
That's not what I'm saying.
We want Biscuit.
But I did play pinball at the Pinball Hall of Fame.
I was going to say, what else did you do? You went to...
Danielle and I went to the Pinball...
I'm sorry, Danielle is who?
Sorry. It's my wife. We went to a pinball Hall of Fame that had over 100 different pinball machines in it.
Okay.
And we played.
She must have been thinking... Look, this is part of marriage. He loves it, so I'm just going to
I think that's
anything.
What she does. I'm sure that's what she does. But she pretends to love it as well, and that's amazing.
What if all this time Danielle had, like, a secret blog where she was just blogging about Jensen? But, like, I can't believe I had to go to a
He doesn't even open the Blu-rays. It's like a whole chapter.
Jensen, if this weren't your life, you would be sitting over here with me mocking people who go on something called a baby moon, right?
Most likely. And I think that both Danielle and I were so against it. But I'm telling you.
Doctors are telling
That's the thing.
People now.
The one, the most advice that we've gotten from anyone is to do it. And from people who are also cynics. They were just like, you have to do it. You have to do it. Like, it was a main thing.
Did they say go to the pinball museum?
No, I
Is
made
that
part
to
up. No, okay. I made that part up.
I think most doctors say go somewhere to relax and enjoy your last weekend, week, whatever it is, without the kid. Jensen took that as somewhere to relax at Vegas.
Yeah.
Vegas is where I'm going. It is such a bizarre choice
It
to
was
me.
A weird choice. But we had a great time. It was super fun. A lot of gambling. Danielle was a big winner.
Now, you know all about the push present, right?
Yes.
Okay, because that was never really a thing during when you had kids, right?
No.
So what is exactly the push present?
It's a gift that you give to your partner after birth, and it's supposed to be pretty nice.
Yeah, so you've been thinking about it?
Yeah, I've been contemplating a lot of things, yeah.
Haven't you already given her the gift?
The gift
if
of...
If you get my meaning?
Well, no, I mean, my meaning is most likely it's jewelry, so...
Yeah, I think that's what most push presents are.
Yeah.
And usually it has to do with the child.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah. Well, a lot of times it's the...
oh, my God. Shaquille's going to be such a large name to put on a
bracelet. Again, you could put the name. You could put the birthstone. You could do, like, something like that.
Okay.
Do you know what the birthstone is for July?
Mm-mm.
Are you kidding? You didn't look any of this up?
I didn't even, to be honest with you, I didn't even think of this. I assumed I was just...
Oh, luck out, it's a ruby.
Oh.
That's
what
so
does that
pretty.
Mean?
It's just the red ruby. So yeah. You could get something, a push present, like whether it's a ruby ring, whether it's ruby earrings.
Got it.
That type of thing.
Is there, are there ruby for weenie?
Let me look up. Are there any pinball games with ruby in
the title? For the love
Holy
of
crap.
God.
My fiance is pregnant right now.
Oh, wow. Didn't know what that clip was going to be.
Maybe you shouldn't have played that.
Beer mug pregnancy. Sorry.
Oh, no.
All right, moving on, you guys. If you missed it... We talked all about Coachella and the different artists that show up. Ariana Grande brought up Nicki Minaj, P. Diddy, Mace, NSYNC, minus JT. Justin Bieber met Billie Eilish out there in the crowd while Ariana was playing. Other highlights, Weezer brought up Chili from TLC. They did No Scrubs. Mm-hmm. Brought up Kurt Smith from Tears for Fears. Did Everybody Wants to Rule the World. Selena Gomez surprised fans by joining Cardi B on stage to do Taki Taki during DJ Snake set. I mean, what the?
It's impossible to keep track of.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what happened second weekend? Besides Kanye showing up, he's going to do the Sunday service on Easter morning. Do they switch out all
I don't
these
know if
special
they, yeah.
guests?
Do that
or
yeah,
what
I mean,
happens?
You get way less, and then a couple are surprises.
I like it. I like it. What was the highlight for you? Was it Childish Gambino?
It was Childish Gambino, yeah.
Yeah.
He was amazing.
Would you have expected that?
Like I would say I'm a 7 out of 10 fan of his, mm-hmm. and that his performance was a 9 out of 10.
Yeah.
That's what I was, great.
Yeah, it was really amazing.
I've seen him 3 times, and he's stunning up there on that stage.
He also
commands the whole stage.
He's also very him.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like, he's not trying to be like anybody else. He's just puts on a show that no one else could put on because he's... You know, Donald Glover. It's amazing.
Dumb question. Allie, you probably know this. Is next weekend the finale for Childish Gambino? He's retiring the character. He's not going to do it anymore. Is that next weekend, or does he have other shows this year before he puts away?
That this is what wrapped it up, because the L.A. dates were his last ever in L.A.
Okay.
So I think
so
this
maybe
is
next weekend is the last Childish Gambino show then.
But that just means he's Donald Glover.
Or some other name, or whatever he comes up with.
He has a date Saturday, April 27th at Landover, Maryland.
Oh, probably a makeup show from his leg.
You know what they say, end your career in Landover, Maryland.
Yeah, did you say that?
It's got to be a makeup date for when his leg was all jacked.
That was my concert venue growing up. That's where I saw all the great bands of my teenage years, was at the Capitol Center in Landover, Maryland.
Wow.
It's a legitimate venue. It's a Staples Center type venue.
You saw a lot of big band there?
Yes, I did. Ruben and I went when Glenn Miller came.
You guys ever go see Radio Live? Like, get to see how they make the sound effects?
Exciting story.
A little Foley work right there.
What I'm saying is Landover's not a big name, but it's essentially a Washington, D.C. venue. It's a legitimate place to play.
Gotcha.
At any point when Childish Gambino was up there, were you like, can you wrap it up and get back to writing Atlanta?
No, I didn't want him to wrap it up because he was great.
Yeah. I need him to get back to Atlanta.
No, Cal.
All right.
Okay. I'm not sure how that's...
I haven't watched the Guava Island or...
I haven't either.
No. I want to. Rihanna and him.
It's a love story to Cuba. Hmm. It's a love story to art. It's a love story to music. He sure dances the same way that he dances on This Is America. And at one point, I'm like, Rihanna's going to laugh at any moment in here. I know she's doing a movie, but she's still going to laugh. But she didn't. Wonder
and he
why?
Takes his shirt off a lot, too.
Oh, well, he has to.
Of course.
That's his thing.
That's his thing.
Yeah. Some birthdays for you guys. Linda Perry, Maisie Williams, Seth Rogen, Emma Thompson, and Emma Watson. And that's what's happening.
Thank you, Ellen. Drive home tomorrow morning and all new Kevin and Bean Show. The host of The Amazing Race, Phil Kogan, joins us and makes us feel small. He always does that. He comes in here and he's all positive and he's all, I just biked all the way around the world 7 times. And we're like, stop it.
He's a lot.
That's
You're
true.
A loser.
Animal stories tomorrow as well. And we've got your tickets for April Foolishness. We're going to be looking for blonde jokes.